Good evening, everybody. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, November 16th, 2017. Jan, am I coming through? Because I don't see my indicator.
You're coming through pretty well.
Okay. I don't know why I don't see my indicator. You know, usually you see it up on the top of the
board. Yeah, mine quit too, so don't feel bad.
Okay, as long as it's coming through. Okay, anyway, it's Monday, November 16, 2017. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening live over another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 515-604-9386. Our participant code is 419-303. If your cell provider blocks or charges for the call, you can call our backup number, 781-838-3728. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, plural, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right. Okay, before we get into tonight's scripture here, you know, Jan, you had mentioned, I think, that there are still people that were having problems getting into our call. I'm wondering if they're calling in off of their cell phones and they're being blocked, the provider's blocking them.
I'm not sure, John. I've got a whole list of stuff about the Monday call and the committee calls I'd like to go over tonight when we get to the announcements.
Okay.
It'll highlight some of the problems people are having calling in.
I'm wondering if we should change back to the old venue.
Oh, I'd love it.
You think so?
It was a lot easier to handle. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. All right, let's think about that. We may do that by next week. I hate to go back and forth, but we need to find a place where we can really communicate and people don't have a big problem to get into.
Right.
Well, you know, maybe we'll call the high-def people and talk with them to see what their anticipation is with the older program. You know, our big concern was to be, you know, thrown out cold, so to speak, at some point, and then be forced over here anyway. All right, we'll see what we'll do with that. All right, anyway, let's move on. We're going to go to our scripture reading. Tonight's scripture reading is Matthew chapter 17. We're going to read verses 14 through 27. So Matthew 17, verses 14 through 27. And when they were come in, to the multitude, there came to him a certain man, kneeling down to him and saying, Lord, have mercy on my son, for he is a lunatic and sore vexed, and oft times he falleth into the fire and oft into the water. And I brought him to thy disciples, and they could not cure him. And Jesus answered and said, O faithless and perverse generation, how long shall I be with you? How long shall I suffer you? Bring him hither to me. And Jesus rebuked the devil, and he departed out of him. And the child was cured from that very hour. Then came the disciples to Jesus apart and said, Why could not we cast him out? And Jesus said unto them, Because of your unbelief. For truly I say unto you, if ye had faith as a grain of mustard seed, ye shall say unto the mountain, Remove hence to yonder place, and it shall be removed, and nothing shall be impossible unto you. Howbeit, this kind goeth not out, but by prayer and fasting. And while they abode in Galilee, Jesus said unto them, The Son of Man shall be betrayed unto the hands of men, and they shall kill him, and the third day he shall be raised again. And they were exceedingly sorrowful. And when they were come to Capernaum, they that received tribute of money came to Peter and said, Doeth not your master pay tribute? He saith, Yea. And when he was come into the house, Jesus prevented him, saying, What thinkest thou, Simon? To whom do the kings of the earth take custom of tribute, of their own children or of strangers? Peter saith unto him, Of strangers. Jesus saith unto him, These are the children, these are, then the children are free. Notwithstanding, lest we should offend them, go thou to the sea, and cast a hook, and take up a fish, that first cometh up. And when thou hast opened his mouth, thou shalt find a piece of money. That take and give unto them for me and thee. Matthew chapter 17, verses 14 through 27. Okay, I guess we'll, well, first of all, just the basic, you know, we're still working on the sheriff's project. I think it's an extremely important project. We're really hoping to get high participation. I'm kind of hoping at least all of the people that do often come to our Monday night conference call, and also those who listen in, maybe over the radio or other ways, that they really consider working with us on this project. It's probably, well, it's an extremely important project. I don't want to say it's one of the most, well, it's one of the most important projects, and we've got, what, three projects we're working on. The grand jury, of course. Actually, four. Well, maybe three. The grand jury, then there's the committee man, which is connected directly to the Committee of Safety, so it's the Committee of Safety project, which at some point those people will morph into the committee men, the elected committee men. And then, of course, this sheriff project. And the Committee of Safety, you know, there's such a connection between the three, between the jury, the grand jury, the sheriff, and the committees of safety. Because the committees of safety is the local people that are involved and interested in getting law, justice applied in their counties. And, of course, the sheriff has a direct relationship not only with the people because they voted him in and he needs their support, and the people are the grand jury, ultimately, of the neighborhood, and there's a direct connection to the people through the grand jury by the fact that the sheriff calls the grand jury. And so there is a really strong relationship between the two, the grand jury and, of course, the sheriff. And, again, the grand jury is representative, ultimately, of all the people. So that connection is extremely important. Also, one of the things that sheriffs don't realize, and we really got to bring it back into their knowledge base, so to speak, and that is their ability to go directly to the people. If they have to grab 25 people off the streets, bring them into a room into the court, just tell the clerk or whatever, I'm going to use this room over here, bring them in, and go get his indictment, okay? He doesn't have to go to the prosecutor, who is a major, major problem for justice, because the prosecutor decides everything, what the charges are going to be. He gets his indictment because, you know, he always gets his ham sandwich. And then he decides on what threats that he'll give to the individuals to force them to plea if possible. He'll decide whether the charges are going to be dropped in this area or not that area. He decides on whether the grand jury can even hear an individual. And of course, all of that is that's really blocking the process. So that in itself is really a crime. They don't have that power. They don't have that authority. When the grand jury indicts, the prosecutor can't make a deal with that individual after that indictment. Only the grand jury could make that decision and, you know, and make some kind of an arrangement with the individual. So anyway, it's a very important relationship between the sheriff and the people, the sheriff and the grand jury particularly. And so this project, in order to educate the sheriff so he understands he can come directly to the people, that he understands how he can potentially arrest individuals such as judges and prosecutors without fear of running, you know, of not being able to support his position. If he's got the law, if he's got the tools, which is the law, he could do a lot and make America much safer. Right, anyway, the Sheriff Project, again, we need high participation. So anybody who's who can participate, whether you can make 5 phone calls a week, or you can make 20 phone calls a week, or 100 phone calls a week, you know, we need participation. We need people to make phone calls. They're going to be short calls, you know, a minute or two long. We're going to create the script on what it's all about and what the people would, you know, really what we want the people to understand and potentially do, and give them a brief idea of the project that we're working on, and get them out to the new website that we're building for the purpose of reading more and understanding more of this educational project we have for the sheriffs. So again, we need high participation. Anybody that's in the committees of safety, all the people in the committees of safety should be participating with this, because we are going to build that relationship. We're going to make that bridge directly between the people and the sheriff on that website. So this is extremely important. Again, you know, the people need to support their sheriff, and the sheriff needs that support. The whole thing about the committees of safety is working a relationship with your sheriff. So this is an extremely important project, and this is what, you know, if we can get the sheriffs educated, the sheriffs can empower us by coming to us with these particular problems, and then we can indict, and therein is the power and the authority. The judge, nobody would be able to stop that at that point. Okay, right now they're trying to cut us out, of course, and this is no surprise, and it's a pressure game. It's just a matter of time. We have to get more pressure on our side than they have on the other side, pushing them, preventing us from getting into the courts. So, extremely important project. We need everybody's involvement. We need, again, I know everybody could make at least 5 calls a week. Everybody. You know, if we get 50 people making 5 calls a week, what is that, 250 calls, I think? So that's quite a few calls, you know. But we can get a lot of people maybe make 10 calls a week. So 5 calls a week, 10 calls a week. And again, if you're retired and you really want to get involved in this project, maybe you can make 100 calls a week. And of course, as we make these calls, we're also going to put into the script, you know, getting the people, because we're going to start off with, you know, calls that are much comfortable. What would you call them? A warm call in opposed to a cold call, because we're going to start with our membership. And so we're going to be calling our membership up. And and we want to not only tell them about the project we got going, we also want to ask them to volunteer to make 5 calls a week. Once we get through our membership, we'll find other sources where we can contact people and get them involved. You know, we can start working on a lot of liberty groups. Everybody belongs to or is aware of liberty groups within their own counties. So there is a reservoir of people that we can really tap into to bring in onto your local side, getting them involved into the committee, the committeeman process, or shall I say the committees of safety. So get them involved in that, and get them involved with, connected with the sheriff. All liberty groups that I've been involved with, and I've been involved with a lot of liberty groups across New York State particularly, and of course in my own counties and close by counties, all of them are interested in making a connection with the sheriff, getting a relationship with the sheriff, getting a sheriff that is constitutional, getting someone behind them, getting someone that they know they can call when they run into a problem, and vice versa, the sheriff knowing he can call them when he has a situation or a problem. So this is a powerful program that we're putting together. There should be an extreme amount of interest in this from everybody involved. Excuse me. From everybody involved. So let's get involved, all right? Okay, let's move over to announcements, Jen.
Okay. You mentioned this particular call number and room. About 2.5 months ago, our web provider said they were going to discontinue the other ones we'd been using for a year and a half or more. And so we converted over to the one we're using now. Well, initially, we didn't have the little green phone we did on the old system. It's called the phone dialer. And so we added that. You can find it on the Monday night, or the meeting, I guess it's called weekly meeting call page. And there's a clicker there you can download to get the dialer. And the outfit that has the dialer has updated their page, so you can actually find easily the dialer for iPhones, fancy phones, as well as laptops and desktops. Now, the one thing that wasn't there, and I've had several calls this week on, was the fact that you have to enter in a meeting ID to get to this room. And that ID is NLA1776. It's all run together, NLA, lowercase, and then 1776, the number not spelled out. So you have to add that. Now that,
Are you telling me we're going to be able to use that dialer to come into this room?
Yeah, that's what I'm using tonight. I've been using it for a month or two now.
Oh, well, why didn't you share?
It works good, you know.
We should do then is we need to get that dialer up on our page.
It's all set up there now, John. Yeah, it's all set up there. Yep.
Okay, all the wording and everything is explained, so someone would write the program or something?
Yeah, all you have to do is click on the download the app. It'll take you to their web page. You download it, you execute it, and you put in our phone numbers and our site ID, meeting ID, which is the NLA 1776.
So people calling on any kind of a phone, cell phone, or whatever is not going to have a problem at this point because really they're opening a program with their smartphones, I guess, or their laptops or whatever they're using.
Yeah,
what they're really doing is opening a program on their phone that's on the internet connection, and
right,
it gets them into the room as an app through that process.
Now, if they have an old flip phone, they'll still have to just call the number and enter the access code.
Right.
Okay.
All right.
Now,
and people also need to understand that if they're still having a problem when they're using a cell phone, that they should call that other backup number because it may be that the provider, the cell provider, is blocking the call. So there's that 781 number up there, too. We need to make this a lot more easier. I think we should really think about going back to the other room. Let's call these people up tomorrow, free conference, and let's see what their intentions are and how much longer that other room's going to stay open. You know, what's going on.
Also, we should be
looking for other venues, you know. Yep. I used to like TalkShoe, and I think what we should do is really we should use TalkShoe simultaneously anyway. And because it's another venue, excuse me, one of the good things about TalkShoe is that, you kind of put a shingle up, and as people come to the website, they get the opportunity to look at all of these different rooms with, having different conversations, and they might come upon us and walk into the room, so you'll get a lot of people just walking in the room looking for a good conversation and discover us and become members. So we should do something to connect TalkShoe with us. So anyway, that might be helpful. And then people have the opportunity to come hear us through TalkShoe also. Or maybe we'll just go back to TalkShoe, you know? I don't know. But anyway, go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, we can check it out tomorrow. Okay. Just note, though, this dialer is set up to use on the Monday night call only at the moment. Although I think we could change it, John, so that we could use it on the other one, except we have a green phone there anyway, so we have a dialer. Okay. Now, all the other calls, that's Tuesday through Thursday, and we have eight of those now, they use our old call-in numbers. That's the old free conference call HD, and I'll talk about that information in a minute. Now, from the calls and emails I've been getting, it's apparent that many people are not aware or are all of our weekly call-ins and the massive amount of information that is available on the NLA website for our committees. We've got all of the documents, information, evidence, and stuff we've filed. I'm just amazed that people out there call me and they have no awareness that we have any committees other than the Monday night call. Some of them don't even know we have the Monday night call.
And that's going to be another reason why these phone calls to get people excited and involved with the sheriff program, we're going to have the opportunity to cover those basic ideas to make them aware of the fact that we have a Monday night call, to make them aware of the fact that we have many different committees that do different things. And then we'll be able to give them that information where they can go and get more information. You know, the web page is necessary. Or just get them out to the site and tell them to click on this, click on that. But we're going to create a dialogue for the people making the calls. And again, each call shouldn't be any more than at most 2 minutes, unless you really, you know, want to get into a conversation with someone for some reason, sparks off and you want to spend time, that's fine. But bear in mind, if each call is 2 minutes long and you can make at least 5 calls a week, that's only 10 minutes a week. Everyone can give 10 minutes a week. Figure 15 or 20 minutes, okay? Everyone can give 15 or 20 minutes a week. Everyone. And what was us if we don't do these things? We have to do the right thing. We have to get up and work and, you know, work with each other and, you know, put our elbow grease into it, put our shoulders to the door, so to speak. Bad, Jim.
Okay, some people are apparently not even aware that we put out a weekly newsletter, although it's sent to every member in NLA. Now, there's only two reasons that I can think of why they don't know that. One is they use a flip phone or a landline and call in, and they don't have a computer. If they have an iPhone, they should certainly know, because they can get email on that. Or they have their NLA My Account is not up to date. They've changed email addresses, and they've gone on to another address, and they've not bothered to change it. That's a problem when trying to call people as well. So I'd like to ask everyone, please go to your My Account and check to make sure that all of your information is updated and accurate, your current email and your phone number and so on. And we send the newsletter to your email address. So if that's incorrect, you're never going to get it if it's not current. Now, I thank you in advance for going ahead and updating your information on your My Account. Now, all of our calls are recorded and posted on the website under the appropriate committee, except for the new sheriff's conference call, and we haven't been recording that yet. We don't have a web page for it yet. Our calendar of weekly events currently starts with the Monday night call at 7, which is the new sheriff's one. Everybody's invited to all of these calls, all 8 of them. The call-in number that we're using now is for this room. It's 515-604-9386. And the backup number is 781-838-3728. And then you need
That all should be found on our website page, right?
Right.
When they click on the weekly call, then they can click on the other buttons to get to the other calls, correct?
Right. And it's at the top of the newsletter every week, the information. You need to enter the access code 419-303-POUND. Now, I'd like to make a plea for Carl. He's working hard on setting up the new sheriff's website. And he says if anyone is interested in helping out with website development on this new sheriff's site that we are creating and is familiar with Drupal, it's done in Drupal, so you have to have working knowledge of Drupal, please email Carl at carl@nationallibertyalliance.org. And I thank you much if you'd like to volunteer. Okay.
The spelling of Carl is K-A-R-L.
Yes, it is, Carl, K-A-R-L. Our main NLA teleconference is at 9 o'clock. That's the call you're on now. If you missed the call, the playback number is 515-604-9876. And the playback
is that for tonight's call, Monday's call?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it might be more convenient to go out to the webpage on click on the call. And because we post every one of them up there, you could download the MP3, and once you download that, you can put it into your phone, you can put it into an MP3 player, you can stick it into your car, you can, you know, whatever you want to do with it, or you could just play right on your computer and, you know, pause it and leave it on your computer if you're doing other things and get back to it or whatever. So for convenience, we post all of our programs, but go ahead.
Now, you're better off going to the website, as John mentioned, and I was going to get to, because we have every call that's been done on the Monday nights for about 4 years on there. If you go to the playback number, you can easily listen to the most previous one. If you want to back up more than that, you've got to do a little fancy footwork to get there. Okay, committee call.
That was one of the other things also with that talk show program is that they, you know, when we recorded there, they automatically went into an archive, and people can, when they come and visit, they can click on the room, and then they can go right to the archive and get anything that's ever been recorded there. And that would save us a lot of space, I think, on because it costs us some money, you know, for the broadband and also for the, particularly for the storage. We have a lot of MP3s up there, and, you know, that might save us some money by moving over to TalkShoe also. But go ahead.
Okay, the committee calls, Tuesday through Thursday. All eight of these use the same calling information. You can use the old green phone on the website, and you'll find that under the weekly call page as well. It'll tell you where to go for the committee calls. You just click on Join Our Committee Meetings on the weekly call page and follow the directions. Or you can use your phone, a flip phone, landline, whatever, and call in to 605-475-3250 and enter access code 449389#. That's the same call-in number and rule we've been using for several years. Now, our first
and that information also is found on that page where the committee's on, so you can get those phone numbers and those access codes. But
It's there and also on the top of the newsletter. Our first committee meeting is a Tuesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, and all these times will be Eastern. Weekly prayer group call-in. You're welcome to join. The initial prayer committee director was Gary Jolly. Then on Tuesday night at 9, we have a new committee. It's the Welcome Committee call-in. The Welcome Committee director is Rhonda Miner. We started this about 5 weeks ago, so we'd encourage you to go there and listen, participate. Then on Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, we have the weekly ham radio call-in. Terry Moore is the ham radio director. On Wednesday night at 9 then, we have the weekly courtroom observers call-in, and Terry Culpepper is the courtroom observer director. If you need to request courtroom observers, go to the courtroom observer webpage on our website and fill in the form. On Thursday night at 8 Eastern, we have the weekly natural healing committee call-in. Now, that's been going for a couple of months now. Wonder Ann is the current natural healing committee director. On Thursday night at 9, then, we have our last one of the week, and that's the Committee of Safety, and we have Captain John who's in charge of that. He's a Committee of Safety Director. Okay, next I'd like to go over some things for our call etiquette for all of our calls here. I've been getting a lot of complaints lately, and people feel we're not dealing equitably with our callers on the Monday night call and on the other calls. So we're taking the following steps to correct this problem. First, we ask that you please submit all questions that are to be asked on the Monday call to questions@nationallibertyalliance.org prior to the call. And that'll guarantee that your question is addressed and answered during the early part of the call. Also, it'll force you to get your thoughts together and put down clearly and concisely as to what it is you want to know so you can write it in an email. And we'll also ensure that your question is addressed during the call. Now, some people have been submitting long statements up to 2 or 3 pages rather than questions. Please use the questions at nationallibertyalliance.org for questions only. After the announcements and questions submitted by email are addressed, next are the topics for the evening and questions pertaining to the topic. And then we'll move on to questions from the queue for Q&A. Now, each caller will be allowed to ask one question, get an answer, and then must get back in the queue if they want to ask further questions. That will give the caller a chance to form a clear and concise second question if they choose, and it will ensure that every NLA member on the call that wants to ask a question will have a chance to do so each week. We'll move much more rapidly through the list of callers. Some people have requested a time limit for each question, but hopefully that should not be necessary, as using this procedure should ensure that we don't have a long drawn-out session with only one person. We'll know better after several weeks whether a time limit will be necessary or not. This procedure will ensure everyone gets a chance to ask a question. Now, sharing the questions between each caller will ensure that we don't take too much time, so we should be able to terminate the calls at midnight Eastern. When we start running at 12:15, 12:30, by the time I get done downloading and uploading, it's 1 o'clock in the morning, and I'm not very efficient at that time of night, so I'd appreciate it if we could stop by midnight. Anyone left in the queue can come back next week and get in the queue at the front of the line when the queue is open. So if you didn't get it for some reason, I don't think there's going to be many people like that. You'll go to the head of the line.
And by the way, the queue is open right now. Anybody wants to get in there, star 6 to get into the queue.
Okay, good. I see we've got one so far. Now, some people unmute themselves during the call, and as a result, they add noise to the call. Now, this interferes with the listeners being able to hear and understand what is being said, and it really corrupts the recording as well. So we will be muting people as needed during the call. Now, please don't feel you're being discriminated against if you are muted during the call, as you may not even be aware that we are picking up background noise from you. Sometimes it's reverberation. You're listening on your speakers, and they're a little bit set up a little too high gain, and we get reverb, and you start sounding as an echo and so on. So we are really muting you out of respect for all the other people on the call. Now, another problem that's been brought to my attention is the fact that your microphone volume level is settable on your computer or cell phone. Now, I usually listen on a headset, as do many people, and some people on the calls have had their mic gain so high, it's totally disruptive to myself and all callers. And since I listen on a headset, I either got to jerk it off, or I got to crank the gain way down, and then I've got to crank it back up when I get a response, otherwise I can't hear the response. So I'm getting calls and emails from people who simply walk away from the call at that point, and that's not good. We want to keep people on the call. We don't want it being disrupted. There's no reason that you need to talk much louder than anyone else on the call. Because of that fact, if you are an offender, we will be muting you and gently reminding you that your microphone gain is way too high, and you need to lower the gain setting. If you're going to be part of the group, you need to respect the group. And that's all that I had for announcements, John. I did not get any questions this week, so
that's... All right. Anybody? Are there any other announcements by anyone else, or any updates or anything?
Robert did not have any. I think Ollie may have if he's checked in yet. You see Ollie?
I'm looking, but I don't see him. That is one of the really bad setbacks on this particular program.
I know. It's hard to find anybody.
Those pages are a pain in the neck. Yeah.
I see Ollie. There he is. Do you have any comments for tonight, Ollie? I just unmuted you.
Not really. I wasn't expecting to get on. I would like to. I do have a few comments, so... I do have first information out of Vegas that this comes from Bran Thornton. He's a fifth-generation native of Las Vegas. His relation worked in the casinos. In fact, he worked in the casinos as an engineer for years. I won't give all the stuff that he's put out on calls and in videos. However, It is very well proven that this is an FBI operation. In fact, a week before it all went down, the FBI totally took over the 32nd floor and monitored that floor for a week. Okay. Whether ISIS or anybody else is involved in this, it's still yet to be proven. However, what we're calling for now is this. Okay, that sheriff, he is in between a rock and a hard spot, okay? That FBI just stand there at the news conference telling what he can say and what not to say. You can see that he is squirming and he's not liking what's going down.
Yeah, that is so disturbing and obvious. I was watching different videos of this guy, and it is obvious.
And Brand's last video brought out an important thought that I sort of forgot about. But in the grief process, people go through an anger stage. He is calling right now for people. There was 23,000 at that event, plus everybody else in the casinos for a mile off, in a mile radius. Then that trial will be starting here in a week or two. He is calling for everybody to join them out in front of the courthouse. The thing is, we have been making good progress up at the top. Trump is making progress, and we are making good progress. However, the one that's going to take this nation back is with the people. The people at a certain point have got to make a stand, okay? And we're calling for people in Las Vegas right now to make a stand. Stand behind that sheriff. Let that sheriff know that the public is behind him, okay? And then what hurt the movement out in Vegas was this anti-cop movement. I'm not going to talk about that. However, there's this major anti-cop movement which actually divided the Patriot movement in Vegas. Now, but what needs to happen is the people, they need to start making a stand, and that this includes the militias. The militias have got to get off their butt, and it's not going to be with arms. The war right now is to stand in the street and start saying no, okay? And right now, the people have got to start taking this nation back. It is going to be county by county and state by state. We've got to start standing up in these counties and taking that county back and start establishing sovereignty, states' rights, state sovereignty, and we got to start from the bottom up. You know, we've been talking about bottom up, top down. Well, right now, the critical part, we're in the critical stage of this battle, either spiritual or in any fashion. We're at the critical stage, but we need to stand right now, okay? And I could go on till 7 o'clock in the morning, but I'm not at this time. I'm running out of breath, and I'm going to yield.
Okay, thank you, Ollie. You know, I'd like to address that a little bit. You know, this sheriff out there clearly is under a great deal of stress. I mean, it is just so obvious. I'm sure they've threatened his life, threatened his family. He's going to say and do whatever it is that they want him to do. You know, what we're doing here with the power of the county sheriff, trying to educate the sheriff and bring all these sheriffs together, we want to offer them a place, and this, we're trying to do this totally hands-off. In other words, we're not going to have any control over this website other than, we're going to maintain the website, keep a lot of education on this website, keep the courses on these websites, add more courses on these websites, and provide a place where they will ask a question, or anybody can ask a question, that's a member, of course, that could ask a question on a form. We'll provide a form on a page, and they can ask a question, and then within 24 hours that answer would be posted, and we'd also email a copy to the person who requested that, who asked that question, and then we'd keep it in the archive, and we'll probably create a directory or something. And we're kind of hoping that all the questions are really legal questions. We might even provide something occasionally coming out maybe once a month or once a week. I don't know. We may do something where we'll be available there live, like we are here on a Monday night conference call, to directly respond to the sheriff. But we'll have to play that by ear as we go. One of the things we want to do is we want to make the website explode as quickly as possible. And so that's where these calls are going to really come into play here. We're going to ask everybody that we call, starting with our own membership, to also become a member on that website, to bring the numbers up, to get the populace out there, to make that connection between the people and the sheriff. Now, anybody who is not in law enforcement, then they will be what's called an honorary member. All law enforcement is, we're not even going to ask them for money. They just sign up for the membership. It's a free membership, and that's it. We've been going through, how we would deal with the honorary members. And I don't want to put it into a position where people would like to be a member there, but they can't afford it. We were thinking of maybe making $60 a year or $100 a year on a maximum. I think what we're going to do is we're going to give people choices. We're going to request, that they can either make a one-time offer, one-time donation, and occasionally make another donation, or they can, get a monthly donation going. We're going to suggest to the monthly donations, that if you sign up that way, give us $5 a month or more into this program, and that would really energize things over there to get us to quite a bit of money quite quickly if we can get a large enough membership moving that way. We're going to suggest for a one-time donation $60 a year, okay? But we're going to give them the opportunity, if they can't afford that $60, that they can check a box and just give $5. That'll be the minimum, $5. $5 a year for the membership. Of course, we'll request when they, they have some extra money one month, an extra $10 or something, give it to us. $60 or more is going to be the suggested membership cost. But again, if people only have $5 for the year, that's good. Again, we want participation. This is not about sales or anything. It's not about making money, but it is about getting the education to the sheriffs that's necessary. And that costs money. We know that our project, to be realistic, is going to be very close to $100,000 to get 20 books in the hands of every sheriff. There's 3,143 counties, so there's 3,100 sheriffs there at least across the nation. And 20 books in each one of them is a lot of books, and it costs quite a few bucks. Some sheriffs might need more, and we don't want to charge them for these books. We want to give it to them. So if a sheriff asks us for another 10, 20, 30 books, we're going to ship it to them free of charge. And hopefully we'll have them to be able to ship out quickly and have the money to do that. So again, this is all going to cost money, but it's really going, all this money is going into the project. So if we can kind of tip our membership from here over to there and grow that membership 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 people quickly over there, that'll also energize and encourage the sheriffs. We want to really, again, the purpose of that site is to facilitate an education, an organization, and a communication among the sheriffs. We're looking for a sheriff or someone that's going to run for sheriff, that would actually take control of the website as far as being sort of a liaison, someone to kind of sort of the president of the thing, whatever you want to call it. And we're going to suggest to them that every year or every 6 months, whatever they want to do, they would replace that person. They just vote another person in, or a person would, take a position. We'll have to figure out, they'll have to figure out how to do that. But the thing is we do need someone that is going to be a leadership role, that is a sheriff or someone running for sheriff. And then they would really, again, their sole purpose would really be just trying to get everyone to communicate. Now imagine this. Imagine if the sheriffs were able to organize across the nation, become educated, be able to communicate, be able to send out an email, a blast email to all other sheriffs that we got a sheriff in distress. Just think with that sheriff out there, out in Las Vegas. It's Las Vegas, right? Just think of what that sheriff out there in Las Vegas, if he can put an email out and get 30, 40, 50, or even 100, or even 500 sheriffs to respond, then they can collect themselves out there and they can arrest all these FBI agents and all these other federal agents and deal with this malignant problem we have in our nation. These people need to be put in jail, and the sheriffs need to be able to do it, but they need power. And that's the word. They need the authority, and that's the law, again, the word, which is the law. So they need the power, they need the authority, they need the backup, they need the support. And that's other sheriffs, and that's the people. And if they had that support, if they had a place where they can set an alarm off and say, sheriff in distress, okay, this whole thing could potentially be turned around out there. So that's how important this project is. I can't even begin to, you know, I'm trying to give some stories and ideas, but it is extremely important. Okay, with that, anything else, Jan?
That's all that I had.
Okay. Gerard, are you here? I see Gerard's here, so...
Yep, he's here.
Okay. Well, I'm going to get started and move over to Brent in a minute, and then if you want to take control of the board, I'm going to be in and out, but I should be here this evening. I want to try to do some work a little bit here and get some other things done, but let's move forward to Brent. Is Brent here? Anybody see Brent? Brent, if you're here and you don't have the control, just hit star 6 and get into the Q&A session there. We'll see you there. Star 6, Brent, if you don't have the control. I don't know if he's here. I guess he's not here tonight.
I haven't seen him yet. I'm looking.
Okay, so what we'll do is when Brent comes in, I'm sure he'll pipe up, or we'll maybe see him come in and we'll try to move over to him. But meanwhile, we'll continue. We'll just go forward. Since we got some people in the Q&A already, in the queue, anybody's got a question, star 6 to get into the queue, and then we'll start taking some questions. Gerard, I'm going to let you cover the board and take the calls, and I'll be here participating with you.
Okay.
I don't know, maybe just let's work off the next button, or you can hit the telephone next to the name. I don't know, whatever you want to do there.
Yeah, okay.
I think the next button is first because it automatically mutes the next person, the person that's on, and moves to the next person. So.
Yeah.
Star 6, anybody wants to get into the queue? Question or comment?
Okay. Got Albert from Oregon. I'm going to unmute you. Go ahead, Albert.
Well, actually, the other one, 585, went on.
Okay, and,
yeah, they were here before, but anyway, so. But go ahead, 585. What's your first name and your state?
Dolan, New York.
Okay, go right ahead.
I have a judge that has been railroading me, and I submitted a peremptory challenge for him to recuse himself with evidence, irrefutable evidence, that show his conflict of interest. But he has his friends within the court reject the challenge. And I submitted it the first time. They said to submit it with a poor person's application because I have zero income. So they were charging me $300. And when I submitted the application without the $300, they said you have to submit this form, the poor person's form. So I resubmitted the recusal form, and then they said, well, you cannot, we reject it a second time because you are not a lawyer and you don't have a law degree, so you cannot submit the peremptory challenge. You have to get a lawyer to do so. So I cannot get any motions filed in this court. And the same thing happened when I submitted a motion to knock
which
down
court, what,
anybody.
What court is this?
Court.
Monroe County's
family court.
Okay, so it's a family court.
Yes, but the case should not be in family court because the person that this judge got to railroad me is not a member of my family. And they are saying that he is married to me.
Jen, we're bleeding through you there. But, okay, well, look, you know, family courts are difficult to deal with. And, you know, I think your mic, your speakers are feeding into your mic. salon.
Okay.
Lower your speakers, or what you do sometimes is turn the speakers a little to the right or to the left so it doesn't come straight to your microphone that's in front of you, and that usually cuts out the feedback. But, you know, here's the thing. Well, we'll see as I talk if we get some feedback. Right now it sounds like it's pretty good. But look, here's the thing. You know, you're not the only one that these judges are doing these things to. And this is, of course, a violation of your unalienable right of due process, an unalienable right of to defend yourself, unalienable right to use the court system. Okay? And so what I'm going to do is I will post a memorandum, a law. I don't think I have one on this yet. I did do the writing recently on it, and I'm using it in a court case, so I can take it out of my court case and create a memorandum on this concerning the right and of the people to have the right of the people to defend themselves, the right of the people to practice law without a license. There is no such thing as a license to practice law. It's unconstitutional. It violates our unalienable rights. And so you shouldn't be rejected for that. And you should be able to get a court of record going, an Article III court on a federal level, which is a court of record, and a court of record on the state level, county level, and so on. And one of the problems, though, is dealing with this judge is also coming in the right jurisdiction. And you know, I'm very, very careful, and everybody else needs to understand to be very, very careful. If you read our paperwork, you can kind of cut and paste our language on jurisdiction. You know, this is a court of record. This is an action at law. We define the word at law, what that means. We define the word court of record, what that means. And so that's posted. We post the jurisdiction on every single page. We also have to make a statement in the court. One of the tricks they play here in New York, well, New York has moved to an electronically filed paper now. So in order to file a case in New York in the state level, you have to, you know, do it online. And it's easy for them to reject. You can't send in a file on demand and it's not going to go through the system. You're not going to get in that way. You have to play ball with their language, okay? So, for instance, I got one case I'm doing, which is a contract case. And the only option in order to get what's called an index number, I don't know what they might call it anyplace else, but in New York we call it an index number. On the federal level they call it case numbers. So whatever they call it in your state or county, I don't know. But it's either a state
index number.
It's either an index number or it, because you're in New York, so you're an index number, or it is a case number. But in order to get your index number, they trap you into their jurisdiction. And they do this in quite a few ways. But let's talk on the commercial end of things. I mean, on the contract end. So I got a contract case that I filed. And the only place that I could check to get through the system, because the computer wouldn't let me go through the system unless I check a box, and all their boxes put you into an improper jurisdiction. You got to realize that. This one said commercial contract. I think it was commercial, comma, contract. It's a contract, action, and they forced me into the word commercial. So what I did is I wrote a paper, okay, and submit that that has to be dealt with, making clear that the records need to be corrected, and I need to be removed out of the commercial jurisdiction because this is not a commercial jurisdiction. And I'll post that up there, too, for people to have a memorandum on that. And again, even though it's in a memorandum form, really it's something you want to put inside a paper. Maybe I'll file the paper the way I filed it. That's what I'll do. I'll file that up there on our website. Next week I'll let you know where I put it, but I'll get it up there. What I went through the whole process of explaining, you know, what through Black's Law, on what exactly commercial, the word commercial means. What is commercial law? And then I made the distinction between that and a court of record and the fact that this is a court of record, okay? So now the court has been brought back into position. The other thing that's a major problem is paying money, okay? No one should ever have to pay money to get into the court. Again, in New York, it's a little bit of a different problem. I don't have this problem in the federal court because I can file my papers through the mail with a file and demand, and then if they reject it, whoever signed for that, you trace it back to the clerk, and then I go after that clerk also and sue the clerk, bring them into the case, and I'll continue to do that to everyone that keeps blocking it. And that has worked for me in the past where with the clerk, I just had to do one clerk, and the next thing you know, they passed my papers through without requesting the money. So that worked in the federal court. But in New York, it's a problem now because I can't go down to the clerk and file the paper as a, file my paperwork as a, directly with them and use a file on demand. So what I did was I paid the $210, and then I immediately wrote a paper in concerning that $210 that they need to return it. Now I'll post those three papers up there, okay? One that takes you out of the commercial level, the other one that gets you your $210 back or whatever they charge you for your index number, okay? And what was the third one that I talked about? It was the jurisdiction. The commercial jurisdiction, that was one. I thought there was three that I was talking about. The commercial jurisdiction, the payment of the... $210 for the index number. I forget what the third one was that I was talking about. But anyway, I'll post these memorandums up there, and you can take them and put them into your case and use them. Get into the court and then start correcting the court, correcting the paperwork, correcting the file. I'm even going to go as far as requiring that anyone who files a paper in this court put up on the top-hand right side of this the papers, what the jurisdiction is. Let's remind each other every time what the jurisdiction is. And by the way, by law, it must be on the papers, what the jurisdiction is. If it's an administrative process, they need to tell what administrative process, what the jurisdiction is for that administrative process. So why not also for this court case, which you want to maintain as a court of record, a court of law, and so getting the paperwork correct in the beginning is probably one of the most important things. Oh, the other thing is coming in and speaking on your behalf as a pro se or even representing someone. You can go into court and represent someone. As a lawyer, not as a lawyer, but in the federal courts, they'll call it an ex-friend, as actual, concern. They actually speak about that in the rules. So an ex-friend is an appropriate thing. But you can go in and be, counsel for someone. You can give someone counsel. And then that's what the Constitution provides, is our right to seek counsel. Not necessarily someone to represent us, but seek counsel. And how I would deal with it, I'm looking to help someone in the court right now, and I'm looking to hopefully be able to speak on their behalf, and hopefully we get the paperwork in. And once that's done, I would only answer, the overall questions concerning what's going on as far as the legality, the papers, the law, what the intent is, or what is, however we'd respond on the law side of things. But as far as the facts are concerned, the facts of the case, then the individual, they should respond because they know better what the facts of the case is than I would. I would know what they are, of course, but they would know it better. So that, again, in order to do that, you first have to neutralize the court. You have to make it clear to the court that this is an unalienable right. And we got quite a bit of information on this, and we got a good memorandum put together that you can use for this. Now, what people need to do immediately when the case is moving, if you get rejected, you can give a writ of error and make the correction and try to move the case forward. And if necessary, demand that they recuse themselves or you make them, you recuse them, get them off the case, get someone else in there. If you could do that, that's good. But if not, If all else fails, the key thing is this, and you don't want to take time. You know, this shouldn't go on for days or weeks, not even days. You know, it needs to be dealt with immediately. And if they resist and reject, then you let them know, we're going to move this into federal court for cause. And you move it into federal court for cause. It's very simple. It doesn't cost any extra money. You use the index number or the case number in wherever you're at, and you move it into the federal court for cause. For cause means that it's an issue that's within that jurisdiction of the federal court, which, of course, anything dealing with a violation of an unalienable right is goes into the federal court. That's their jurisdiction. Those decisions cannot be done in a lower court. That has to go to the federal court because the others don't have that jurisdiction. So you move only, what you're doing now is you're not moving the case. Don't confuse the case with the issue. You're moving what's in this courtroom is the violation against your right of due process, the right to be self-representing, the right to represent or help or assist someone else. You're moving that issue into the federal court, and you want to get a decision from that, and you should be able to get that relatively quickly, 30 days or so. You'll run your papers, and you have a hearing, and it's done. Then that lower court will be ordered to obey the law and allow the process go forward, and now you can continue on your case. And if you get any more violations as you go along, you move that back into the federal court. That's the only way you're going to win. You have to know how to use the system. And you have to have strong paperwork, and you have to put, because when you move it into the federal court, you got to put them into a place, that the judge there, into a situation where they have no choice but to agree with you and give you what you're looking for. So you got to make it clear on the paperwork, and I think we do that, and I'm going to share those papers shortly, and I'll announce next week where they're located at, because I'm not sure where we'll put them yet. But I'll announce next week where we'll locate those papers, and then people will be able to bring that into their cases. But you got to take control of the case. Every little thing, every little issue you want to deal with, and you want to take care of it right away. As soon as my papers are filed, I file the paper concerning the money. As soon as the papers are filed, I'm filing right now papers concerning the commercial. We're not commercial. Our partnership isn't a commercial partnership. We're not selling anything. We have, a different issue. It has nothing to do with commercial movement of product or anything of that nature, especially between the states. And remember, you know, the federal government only gets involved, or even the state gets involved in commercial things, generally speaking, going in between the states. But what happens within the states, now the states have to deal with that, and even they are limited on how far they can go, but clearly they have no control over a contract between people. That's not a commercial issue, unless it was a commercial contract, okay? That could be a different story if it's dealing with commercial, you know, the flow of product that you're fighting over. Between, you know, going, leaving the state, but make it federal, and within the state, make it commercial within the state. But nevertheless, we're not talking about dealing with the law of the sea. There is commercial restrictions and requirements, and that should be clear in legislation. And as long as it's constitutional, then you'll want to use it, because you'll find it should be pretty helpful. But anyway.
Hey, John?
Yeah.
When you file the case electronically...
Can you get a little closer to your mic, because you sound like you're far away.
Oh, maybe I turned it down. Hang on a minute here. When I was going to say, when you file electronically, they expect you to pay right then and there with what, a credit card? I mean, what...
Credit or debit card, yep.
That's it. That's it. In other words, they won't take...
You know, there may have been a way that you could check something in mail money, and I'm not sure... on that. I didn't look too deeply. I mean, I just saw the credit card and I went straight through with that. I know when I went down there, they told me I could prepay right then and there and then go fill the paperwork out online if I wanted to do it that way. I almost did do it that way, but I went online and did it.
Now, every time like Solange has to go to federal court, they're going to charge her $400 to go into federal court for those issues each time?
Oh, no. You're moving the case Solange, maybe you should mute your mic while you're listening and not talking, because we're getting feedback. Or lower your speakers if you can. Lower your speakers or lower the modulation on your mic, maybe. I don't know. But anyway, no. All that has to be done is the case that you're on already has a number, okay? And you're moving the case into the federal court for cause. You've already paid for your court number, your index number or your case number. And you shouldn't have had to pay for it, but you already got one. So you're moving that, and you give the state or the county or whatever the number is, you put that information in. This kind of information is put on what's called the cover sheet on a federal case. I don't know how many people are familiar with how that works. But again, there's a cover sheet that goes on. Anytime you file a federal case, you start off with a cover sheet. And that information is on the front cover sheet. If you're moving from a lower court, you have that case number in there. And then you put a place for the case number for the federal court and just leave a blank line. They'll apply a number there. And remember, you're only going in there for the cause of action, which is the violation, that particular violation of due process or right to defend or whatever it is that you're going in for, okay? And I would do, if I had to do that, though, I make sure I go on the attack. You know, I put my axe on my shoulder and I go in on the attack. I'm going to take that judge out. That judge is no longer going to be on that bench in that court. And so you need to sue the judge for damages. And if it's so blatantly, outlandishly obvious, okay, that the judge is really just committing fraud himself, then you go for fraud on the court right there in the federal case, in the federal court, and you put in your damages and what it is going to take to restore that damage. You know, you can't put $300 million, but you can put, you know, $1,000, $5,000, maybe $10,000. I don't know. You just don't want to be ridiculous with these things. And you want to make it simple, move through, get yourself back into the court. You know, if you go for $1 million, you're going to now get caught in a whole new other court case up in the federal level, and you don't want to do that. Or it'll just be just denied, you know. So you have to do a reasonable wherefore clause and be reasonable with your damages. You don't need to become a millionaire on this. You know, $1,000 or $5,000 injury for that is probably sufficient. And it'll slide through very easily.
So
okay?
In a federal case, when do they use a federal jury? Or do they? Is it just the judge making the decision?
Well, at that point, you're going to be doing this and allowing the judge to make the decision. And you know what?
Right.
You know what the right decision is? The right decision is approving... Is your decision, you know, and to force the lower courts to obey the law. And, of course, if that judge breaks the law, well, already he's been alerted to the fact that you don't have a problem going after a judge. That's number one. So he should realize, or she should realize, no problem going after you either, okay? And if that doesn't deter them from doing the right thing, then you immediately refile back in the court. You give a writ of error, and you make that judge a defendant. You do a show cause, make them a defendant, and you go after them for fraud on the court because they know what the law is. If you are showing them the words of the United States Supreme Court or the words of American jurisprudence, you know, the words of the law that cannot be denied, that must be obeyed, then it's just that clear. There's nothing to argue here. There's nothing to interpret. There's nothing to wonder what it says. It says what it says. And it's that simple.
I want to bring something else up because we've run into it, John, in the federal courts especially, where they start retrying the case when they're not supposed to. They're not supposed to get into your case. You're supposed to be trying the federal issue, which was the violation of the right. You're not supposed to be getting into all the minutiae of the case that you filed in the lower court.
Only what you're bringing in there. You're bringing in the issue. This upper court needs to do a writ of mandamus. That's what you're chasing down, a writ of mandamus from the higher court to the lower court. The federal court telling the lower court, obey the law, and this is how you're going to do it. This man or this woman has the unalienable right. And guess what? We get to write those papers, by the way. When we submit our papers, we also submit the papers that we expect the judge to sign. So we get to write those papers and tell this judge what he needs to do. And the federal judge is to sign it. You know, the judge is not supposed to write those papers. We're supposed to write those papers, and he's supposed to sign them. Now, of course, if we're out of line, he has every authority to correct the out of line part. If you're asking for $1 million for some kind of a violation, that just the fact that you're moving to the court to get the decision to go back, you know, what that real damage is, you know, and you ask for $1 million, he's going to scratch it out. You're not going to get it. But you can get $1,000 or $5,000, you know, per incident, per violation, you know. All right. Anything else on that, Gerard, you want to add?
No, that's it. I just want to get so people understand when they go into federal court the different stuff that you run into and be aware of it. That's all.
All right. I hope that helps you, Salon.
Yes, that helped me. I understand what I need to do. I have a better idea.
Yeah, look at I'll drop in your Skype box those memorandums tomorrow to you directly, so you have them. Meanwhile, for everyone else, I will be posting them up online, and I'll make note of where they're at next Monday. If I forget, hopefully someone will remind me, and I'll say, oh yeah, they're over here or there. Okay, so but go ahead, Salon.
I have been studying the information on the website, which is very interesting, and I have been learning some concepts like the unalienable rights of citizens to keep their pensions that cannot be touched by government employees. And my mother's pension, Social Security disability benefits, which turned into her pension, as I was told,
I can't really get involved in that kind of a discussion as far as trying to assist you there. I don't have knowledge there anyway. But that's something that if you have the knowledge of the law and you bring it all together and you make your case, you should be able to prevail. And again, look at when you make a case that is purely obvious, okay, and you're bringing the law and you're laying the law down and you're telling the judge this is the law and you're expecting it to be obeyed and concluded according to the law, and then they turn around and go a different direction, remember, a writ of error is the proper response to that. You give them a writ of error and you overturn them, okay? If you know, some people may be frightened to overturn them, but I overturn them. And I go forward. We move forward in the court. And if it continues to happen, then we'll pursue federal issues. But look at, if you don't want to, if you're afraid to overturn them, give them a writ of error. Then move that issue directly into a federal court for a writ of mandamus, in order to tell that judge to obey the law. And you write the papers that you're expecting that judge to sign. Of course, they got the X amount of days to respond to that before the judge makes that decision. But I can't discuss the basic details of your case in that level that you're talking. I can help you with these kind of problems when you get stuck and what to do next, and maybe help you out with. And again, my memorandum, you know, that I'm going to put out there is not necessarily how you might want to file this. You might want to just strip out all the language and put it into a motion, a show cause, and all those other things. And that's another thing you could do to the judge is a show cause, you know, before you even try to move it into the federal court. You give them a writ of error and a show cause at the same time and see where that goes first, because that could escalate your case a lot quicker, and you may shake them up enough to realize that they're breaking the law. By the way, they already know they're breaking the law. I don't buy it that they don't know. They know.
My question was only to about the filing of the papers. When I file the paper to get my mother's Social Security back, I need to wait about 2 weeks. So I was wondering what form I need to file so I can file it before I finish learning what I need to learn. So by the time I finish, I can just go into the court, because they're going to give me about 2 weeks notice to go to court.
What form to do what now?
What form I need to file in court to get my mother's Social Security check or my mother's pension check back, because the Social Security disability people are taking it.
Look, I'm not too big on forms. I like to create my own paperwork. But I also don't want to, you know, you recreate the wheel. You know, I mean, look at, there are certain forms that they have basic forms, you know, and motions, and, you know, why not use their form? You know, I don't care. I'll use the federal form on that for the federal case. I'll use the state, you know, the state form on the state cases. I don't care. That doesn't matter. But when it comes to being a little creative, I don't know that there is a form for what you're talking about. I think it's a paper to be written. And what are you expecting for them to do? You know, I would do show cause. I think they call it an Article 78, okay, which is a show cause. And they played a lot of games with this Article 78. But in any event, at least they have here in New York. But in any event, Article 78, which is a show cause, as a matter of fact, I see Brent's here when he comes on, and I pass the mic on to him. Maybe he can give us a little thought on what he knows about this, the Article 78 and show cause, if he wants, or correct me if I'm wrong. But when you do the show cause to them, you know, they have to answer that. So if you give them a writ of error, if they've done something wrong and you do a show cause, or if you're not getting what needs to be gotten, they're refusing to give it to you, do a show cause on why they're violating the authority that they have. Why are they not doing what they need to be doing? You could do a show cause directly to anybody in government. You know, show cause your action. You come up here and you show me by what authority you're acting and why you refuse to do this. I want to know specifically so that I can understand your position. And it should be an understandable position. You demand that. And when they don't respond or they don't answer correctly, then they defaulted and you move the court accordingly. Okay, you make a motion to move the court to do something. Remember, a court cannot move itself, and if it does, they just violated the law. Okay, that's a crime, in my opinion. Okay, but they violated the law. If the judge moves the court on his own accord, no, one of the parties, either I move the court or the other party moves the court, and the court must move according to law. Okay, you lay the law out, make it clear. I use the rules of the court. I love the rules of the court. In the federal court, not all of it, just a little bit of it, because a lot of junk in there. I just won't deal with it. And there's a lot of fraud in there, particularly dealing with the in rem process. But it's all administrative, and that's just another game you got to deal with and understand the commercial problem there and how to deal with it. And I already explained, you got to get yourself out of that commercial game. Don't play ball in that particular sandbox. Get out of it. The only place I would play ball in the sandbox is with the IRS. The only place. I will use their paperwork against them so quickly, so easily. I'll use their codes and destroy them. Read their codes and you can destroy them. That's the secret to defeating those people. Just read the codes. When they send a paper to you, they always have a code on it. If they're telling you got to give money or you got to answer or whatever, or you got to reveal your records, they always give you the codes by what authority. Read them and you'll kick their butt. I'm telling you. So sometimes you have to dig a little deep into those codes. Follow the trail. The code will lead you here, and then it'll define something over there. They'll lead you to that other code for a further definition or trying to get to the point where the authority comes, and then you'll find out what authority it is. You know, the authority to deal with, distillers or gasoline or fuel transportation or storage or something of that nature. It has nothing to do with you and nothing to do with me. Read the codes. That's the only place I would do it. And the main reason I would do it that way with the IRS is because you're never going to win the battle standing on a constitutional right in their courts unless you brought it into an Article III court, controlled it very carefully, and even there's a danger. But if they initiate it from their side, that's a whole different story now. Because you're not in an Article III court. You're in an administrative court running on the commercial, dealing with the law of the sea, not the law of the land. The commercial law is what you're dealing with. And then they have limitations. They have statutes of limitations. If you don't pick up and address certain things within the first 15 days, of the paperwork, dealing with in the very beginning, okay? If you don't do it within 15 days of filing your paper, then you then now have... is that how it was, Gerard, 15 days of filing your paper or answering? What was it? Do you remember? On that in rem thing. Anyway, it says in their rules that if you don't respond within a 15-day period, that you can no longer reject or resist or make a defense against in rem.
That was after you answered. Then he wanted to give you extra time.
Right.
And then you found out that if you hadn't answered that in 15 days, it would have been thrown out.
Yeah, he kept getting annoyed because I said, I'll answer that in a couple of days. No, you got a couple.
No, it could take more time. Go ahead. I'll give you a month. And you answered it in like a week. And then you
found out after the fact
that if you hadn't answered it in 15 days, I guarantee you the other side would have come back and said, oh, I'm sorry, he's out of the statute or whatever you want to call it.
Right. So anyway, you got to read the rules of the court. You know, don't let that go by. You know, try to stay within their rules. Sometimes the rules are very, very powerful for you. You can say, hey, rule this or rule that, you know. But what was it, Rule 17? I think Rule 17 identifies with the right of a friend, a next friend. I think that's Rule 17. I don't remember. But, you know, read the rules. I have a copy of the rules, and you can breeze through them rather quickly, but so you should read them from beginning to end just to get familiar with them, and then keep a copy with you, especially when you write your papers, but even when you're in court, you know, you may remember something, and you can look down the list anyway. There's an index there, and you can look for what you're looking for. Ah, there it is, okay, and then you can bring that rule up in the court. You know, I object, Your Honor, you know, according to the rules, whatever it is, this, that, or the other thing. So use their rules as long as they are constitutional, you're comfortable with them. And
yes, I think I'm going to do an Article 78, but I wonder, I have written a petition before, and I used the New York State Attorney General's format for that petition. Can I use the same petition to take it to the federal court, because I need to go to the federal court to claim my mother's pension.
If you're going to, they're not going to decide the issue. They're only going to decide the constitutional issue, and then it'll be sent back to the court to be dealt with in its proper jurisdiction. So you got to remember that. Number one. Number two. Again, if you're going to go into a federal court, okay, read the rules. And there's a place called Forms. You could find it in the index right away. Forms, pop, open up the forms, and it tells you how to write you have to have a cover sheet. It tells you exactly what's required on that cover sheet. Now, you can add a little more information. You can take a little bit of, do a little this, do a little that, but basically stick with the form. Okay, and when you speak to move into the court, you're doing these things under the rules, and you point out the rule in the federal, in the federal rules. You point out whatever it is that rule that provides for you to move this case in number one, or to do this number two, or to make a motion for this number whatever. You know, use the rules as your leverage to force the court to do the right thing. Use the law. Use their boss. I remember talking to a judge on the state level, and he's telling me that I can't do something, and I'm telling him he can, and I told him he didn't have the jurisdiction to go that way, and this was defending my wife. And then he says, well, I'm going to make my decision. I says, well, I guess you're just going to overrule the United States Supreme Court. And he got a little frustrated with me, and I started to realize maybe I better back down a little bit. But, this is the argument that they will make with you, and because he's thinking one jurisdiction, and you're thinking another jurisdiction. And that's the game that's going on in there. And they think they're protected. First thing you want to do is strip them of that power. Take away that power. Deal with the commercial problem. Deal with the jurisdiction. Deal with the meaning of a court of record. If it's in the federal court, make sure you're in there talking about the fact that this is an Article III court. Define the Article III court. Use the Constitution to define it. Use the Constitution to show the judge that he has to obey it. Article VI, you see? That's how you win a case, and that's how you leverage the case. And remember, you know, getting out of the court if you're being assaulted and then leaving you alone, that's a win. If you can get out of the court, if they're coming out after you and you can get away, Don't go after the money. Leave the money alone. Just get out of there. You're getting out of going to jail. You're getting out of losing your house or whatever, your bank account or whatever it is they're chasing, you know?
Yes, I'm not interested in the money. What I'm interested in is to get rid of this judge and also to go to a court where I can be judged by a jury because he's refusing to give me a trial by jury.
If you wanna remove the judge, first order of business, I'm gonna just do it real quickly. And this I think is helpful to everybody. Spending a lot of time with you, but I'm spending a lot of time, but only because this is such a good issue. I'm spending this time, and I think everybody's interested in hearing this for their own selves, their own cases, their own ability to, defend themselves, okay? But look, go into the court, write a writ of error with a show cause, okay? Give him the opportunity to show cause. He's not going to show you the cause, okay? He's probably going to ignore you, okay? Look in to see what's required, 20 days or 30 days, okay? You can probably do it in 20 days. So if he doesn't respond in 20 days, you default him and move it into the federal court for cause to get that default, give him the wherefore clause, and you get your restitution, his damages, and he's holding back your case and all kinds of stuff. If you think it's necessary and it's so blatant, go after him for fraud on the court. Remember, only an officer of the court can be accused of fraud on the court. So go after him for that. And you're looking, and of course, you're going into the federal court to get a writ of mandamus. That's your main reason. And the writ of mandamus is demanding that. And if you go for fraud on the court, you're also going to remove him from that bench. Okay? Not literally from the bench. I don't know if the federal judge would do that, but you want to literally move him from your bench in your court. Okay? Remember, this is your court if you brought this to play, or did they bring this to play? That's another question. I don't want to get into the details of your case. Just the generalities, okay? The details, you should be able to know how to fight and defend. You know the facts. You should be looking up the law. You should be defending yourself. You know what you could do there. You just want to get the justice system to work for you. That's where I can help you, okay? But I got to move to the next caller. If you want to ask more, and I'll send you that paperwork on Skype, but if you want to ask more, get back into the queue, okay? Because
you
got to move to the next caller. You're welcome.
Yeah, Brent.
I see Brent is here. Yeah.
Brent's here. Shall I unmute him?
Unmute Brent. Brent, we're going to move over to you. Someone's got to call Brent and show him how
right
to get
right here. That's
a little bit back of that.
Did you unmute him?
I do know how you can get rid of it. You have to breathe deep and you have to.
Yeah, Brent, you're unmuted.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I'm sure
all right. So let me, Brent, are you ready?
But I don't.
Brent, are you ready?
I don't think he's
Here's your
unmuted.
Old white man.
He doesn't know that we unmuted him.
Brent, you're unmuted. Hello, Brent.
He is?
Brent, you there? Maybe he's away from his computer. He's been unmuted. Who unmuted him?
I did.
Okay, how can you tell if he's unmuted? Oh, yeah, he's in the thing there. Okay.
Yep.
Hey, while we're waiting for Brent, just two things on that, John. Number one, I just want people to realize, how you talked about the judge was violating. You don't want to fight with the judge if you think you're going to. Don't get held in contempt. Just say, I object, and then you can put in a paper later instead of arguing with him. And it's very important to object, a timely object. If you don't object, you're done. If you don't object at the hearing, you can't go back.
Yeah, you lose your opportunity. It's defaulting. It's defaulting in that area, whatever it is that you didn't object to.
You do like Gordon says.
You can tell
right
outside of it.
And if he says anything, you say, because it's not my wish, you don't get into it, and then you give him a paper. So then he gets it in writing.
I just don't
want to
take care of that. Otherwise,
it's not better.
Yes.
Hey, Brent, you're unmuted. Can you hear me?
The thing they need to fix is their sign.
Brent, can you hear me? And I hear a lady's voice coming through Brent's phone here.
It's clean, but it's not as nice as that other one.
Okay, I'll mute him. We could try to unmute him in a little while after the next person, Gerard.
It's getting late, and he's going to go, and before you know it, we won't get through.
All right, if I'm not here when you unmute him, just introduce him and let him... go through whatever he's going to cover tonight. He's going to, I'm sure, stick on the declaration again. But go ahead.
I just have a little piece of news, being that we're on the subject of guardianship, and this comes from Nikki. She sent this through one of the forums, and she says excerpt from Crime and Justice on Saturday, October 7th. Says Congress has now finally recognized a well-documented nationwide scandal where judges sidestep family members and appoint outside for-profit guardians to handle the financial and personal affairs of the aging. Americans, in the end, hard-earned estates are frequently plundered, and families are left grieving. Inheritances wind up paying the fees of total strangers. So we must, there's enough noise out there. Now, I don't know what that means. It says Congress, but supposedly they're working on it. Maybe it's something you want to follow up on and find out what they're doing, because maybe there's something you can quote there, and maybe you'll scare the judge if he knows that they're actually going to do something now. So that's a good piece of news, I assume. You know what I mean? So we're going to go ahead now and go to the next question, which I believe is Albert from Oregon. Okay, Albert, you're unmuted. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. I have a concern on your free courses that are one of the tabs on the National Liberty Alliance website.
Mm-hmm. Well, on the free courses, one of the tabs, what's the question?
Okay, I'm sorry. I was talking and I didn't know I was muted. But anyway, Albert, I'll give you a mic back in a minute. Yeah, we're getting some family background there, Gerard, if you can mute up or maybe lower their volume.
Well, I don't know. There's no noise here.
It sounded like it was coming through you. Okay, Albert's unmuted again. Go ahead, Albert.
Okay. So I tried to take their course, and I was told by Kathleen to log in first, which I did as Humble Man. That's my user ID, and I still could not get to the course. It takes me directly to the quiz. I want to take the course first in civics and the Constitution and whatever courses are available, and then take the quiz. So I don't know if there's a glitch.
Hold it. Are you telling me that you're trying to do the constitutional course first, but you're going through the
No, I tried to civics course first.
Okay, so you take the civics course, okay.
Now what? But it's not taking me to the course. It's taking me directly to the quiz.
Oh, well, above the quiz, I believe it's been a while since I looked at it, but I think right above the quiz, you got to push the button to play, and then you listen. You either watch a video or listen to an audio.
Regarding that Michael. Yeah, as far as the Michael videos goes, that's no problem. I can get to the Michael's videos regarding the Constitution and all the good stuff he has going over there on his videos. But it's the civics courses.
What happened is you probably heard the audio or the video, and then you were in the quiz area, then maybe you left, and then you came back, and you keep going to the quiz area where you need to at least listen or watch the video or audio again, right? Is that what?
No, I'm not talking about the video. I'm referring to the civics course, which is not a video.
The civics
course.
As far
as I know.
No. The civics course is a whole bunch of videos and audios, and you listen to a video, you watch a video, and then you answer the quiz questions, or you listen to an audio and then you answer the quiz questions.
Yeah, but when I click on those, it takes me directly to the quiz.
Okay, what you're going to have to do is talk to Catherine about it again to see if she
can help
you. Okay.
She did not respond. Then I called Jan a couple of times. One time I left a message, and Jan never got back to me.
Okay. Well, look, Jan's here now, so he's hearing you. Maybe if Jan can't help you and work it out through Catherine, maybe he can find some time. Carl can find some time. Carl's a very busy individual. He gives us a tremendous amount of time of his time doing all the technical stuff for whatever we're doing, both on this site and the new site we're building. So we don't want to use up his time and waste his time. But if we can't solve it, maybe when he gets the time, he can connect with you, take a look. Or you can do it over Skype, because this way he can look to see your desktop. I'll tell you what. Why don't you get a hold of Jan and connect with me, and maybe we'll do it. We'll do it over Skype, and we'll connect with your desktop and see if we can't see the problem. You know,
yeah, well, like
Catherine might be able to do this if she's with you looking at your website and may say, oh, I see the problem. Maybe something very quickly, we'll see. And if Catherine and Jan can't do it, then I'll try to get involved. Maybe Jan can give me a call off the fly. He can usually get me. He'll find me. And then if I can't solve it, then we'll see if we can't get a couple of minutes from Carl to look at it, and maybe he can deal with it quickly. But we don't want to waste his time. We want him in and, on and off the phone quickly if he comes to help.
Yeah, but I'm a little disappointed with Jan for not responding to my call. One time I left a message, and he never returns call.
That was a day or two ago. Yeah. I'll get right back to you tomorrow morning.
Yeah. You know, sometimes, you know, I...
Yeah, but did you get my message when I left a few days ago, like 3 days ago?
No. I had you call, I think it was yesterday.
Yeah, but then prior to that, I called and left a message.
Yeah, well, Jan's been up at the hospital with his wife the past week, so he might not have been in when you called him. He was out.
And also, he's probably the second most overloaded person with his organization.
Yeah, I understand that. But see, I want to get going. I want to get going, and I've already committed to sending you a $100 donation and get myself educated properly and become an administrator in my county and get moving.
And we want to help you, okay? We'll do everything we can. But, you know, do remember that, you know, we are all overloaded, so we may miss, you may lose something here or there, and then you give another call, and you'll get us. And
okay.
But you have other people to call. You know, you got, I think you want to stick with Catherine and
I did.
To get Jan together with Catherine, because then they can look on your desktop as you're opening it up, and then they might be able to discover the problem quite
quickly. Yeah, if they can just guide me over the screen, you know, so I can get started on the course.
And Jan, if you guys can't see nothing, maybe you can try to pull me in off the fly, and maybe I'll see something. If not, then we'll see.
Yeah, I appreciate that, because I want to get going here.
Okay, all right.
Yep, sure.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. I'll go open the next question.
Brent, are you there yet? Let's see if we can find Brent. Hang on a minute. Did you just unmute him?
No.
All right, I will. Okay, Brent, are you there? Calling Brent. You know, Brent, maybe you're muted. Maybe you hit *6, or maybe, I don't know, maybe you're muted somewhere else. You're not muted on this venue, but maybe your phone is muted. Because if you're talking, we're not hearing anything. And you are definitely unmuted here. All right, he just fell off. All right, if we see him pop in, that's when we'll try him again. Gerard, go ahead. Next person.
Okay. I'm going to... Next caller, it looks like James from New Mexico. Go ahead, James.
Yeah, how are you guys doing, man?
Pretty good.
Listen, I wanted to get a thing from John Durash on... I recently removed a criminal traffic case to federal court. They accepted it, gave me a file number. And then about 10 days later, I've just gotten a remand notice. And, you know, I removed it to federal court on the jurisdiction, no due process, and heavy fraud on the local court. And I get back in this remand. They're using 28-1442 and 1443, which has nothing to do with my pleading. 4-2 is if you're a federal officer. 4-3 is if you're a racial issue, civil rights that way.
Who's
so
using that on you, the federal court?
Say again?
Who's using those on you? The federal court using those statutes on
you? Yes, yes. Yeah, they've gone into a rendition of, they just picked that out of the air, that 1442, 1443, if you were this or there were that. But you're not this and you're not that, so we're remanding it.
The question comes, though, did you move it in properly into the federal court? Did you stay on focus and on the issue? You see, here's my point here. You don't want to argue the case in the federal court. You want to argue the fact that you're not getting due process and they're bringing you into jurisdictions unknown. Those are the two issues you really want to argue. Now, it is true, if it has something to do with traveling and being licensed for traveling, that is another issue you could bring up. So you can, you don't want to get into the details of the case here in the federal court. You just want to get into the facts that you want this court to do a writ of mandamus to the other court, commanding them to respect and obey the Constitution and give you your due process and give you in a proper jurisdiction. And to remove any issues concerning, and you got to word this properly, you know, you have to think about how you're going to word this, but you want them to make them understand that your right to travel cannot be licensed, okay? And then once you get those three points back into the other court, okay, now the court's got to operate accordingly. Now, they may continue and try to find you guilty or something, and they start moving in that direction, and it becomes blatantly obvious that they are fraud on the court. In other words, they're just ignoring the law. They're ignoring the conclusion of the law, and they're just coming out after you. It's vindictiveness. You can use vindictiveness at this point because, remember, when you went to the federal court to force them to obey the law, the other thing I'd do is I'd have the judge removed off his bench. That'd be the other thing. You want to get rid of this guy. Get a fresh guy in here.
Yeah,
the federal court's got to do the mandamus to the lower court. They got to be able, they're the ones that's going to have to remove him from that case. You have to move the court for that because at this point he's biased and vindictive and is committing fraud on the court, and he is not a judge that has any honor.
Look,
you want him gone.
They accepted his case. He put it in for due process violations and fraud and all this other stuff. They accepted the case, gave him a number, and then they came back 10 days later and remanded it and threw these two things in. Well, you're not this and you're not that, so you don't.
Yeah, but they found something in his paperwork that allowed him to do it. You see, your paperwork, look, you got to be really careful with every point, every thought, every conclusion, back everything up, be so careful. It's like playing chess. And you know, a lot of this comes with experience. After you get enough experience, you start to know, I got to cover this base, I got to cover that base, and I got to cover this base, and I can't forget this one either, and I got to make sure I cover that too. You see, and you kind of, it really stinks that you have to get in there and battle the judge before you can deal with your case. That really is a rotten, horrible thing, and that's the problem we have constantly. And if it's
well,
the other
I'm
side
where
they're coming at you criminally, then they're attacking you. And again, they're attacking you on things that are not constitutional. But go ahead.
I would just you know, appeal the reason that they're remanding.
Well,
but
no, no. Now you're giving up your right of a court of record. Let me tell you something. When you go into a court and you open a court of record, okay? And I don't know if you know about opening up courts of record. Have you opened up a court of record?
Okay.
All right. So you open up a court of record. You're not going to appeal anything. You go directly to the source and attack it with a high. You go to the higher court and you attack it. Okay. So.
All right. So based on that, should I do a writ of error and demand that the court not remand?
Writ of error, show cause, and when they fail that, move it into the federal court for cause. Now look at the other thing. It was on the tip of my tongue. It was very important here. Oh goodness. I lost my train on this one, my train of thought. Go ahead. Maybe I'll remember it as we're going.
He's with the federal court now. He moved it in the federal court for cause. And they're telling
yeah, John, you got to get that straight. I'm long past 5 months of the local court.
Yeah, but you've done something wrong on the paperwork. You've done something wrong there that they feel that they can respond to you this way. And I don't know what that is.
And they can do it without telling me what that is? They can.
They never tell you what it is, but you can demand that they explain themselves. But again, you know, you have to do everything in proper order, and you try to eliminate these problems by writing the proper paperwork. Look,
gotcha.
I have numerous.
That's trial and error, but once they've remanded
yeah, of course,
now.
Of course.
And the remand is based on 28.14.4.2 and 28.14.4.3. This is their basis in federal court.
And what are these things? What's the nuts and bolts of that?
One is that if you're a federal officer, then you have a right to be in federal court. And the other
okay.
is if it is a civil rights violation tied into the Organic Act of 1871 and 13th and 14th Amendment.
Okay,
racial
all right. So they found the loophole. You didn't tighten up enough to be able to allow them. You know, you got to prevent them from impregnating your case, okay? And that's what they've done. Somewhere in your paperwork, you were not able. You were not strong
well,
enough.
Also on that
well,
paperwork
point enough.
Is,
but let me. Here's the other point I wanted to bring up. Let me bring it up real quickly,
right.
And then we'll continue on this train of thought that you're on now. And that is, look at when you go into a court, and you move the court this way or that way. If you can get the judge to give you a ruling, even though you're heading towards a trial by jury, you're always heading towards a trial by jury. That's where you're always heading. But as long as the judge is giving you what you want, you keep taking. If the other side is that dumb that they don't know that they can object to that and say, hey, this is a court of record. You can't make a decision here, judge. They don't know that. So let him make the decisions that are good. When he makes the decisions that are bad, you give him a writ of error, you do a show cause, and then the next move, go into the federal court to deal with that problem with a writ of mandamus, and remove him from the bench. The other judge will be a little more nervous, okay? So, and also, at this point, he's going to be pissed off at you, so he's already biased, and he's going to be more biased, so you don't want that judge sitting on your court no more. So that
well,
is the key to this whole thing that you have to realize. Now, you can get the case won. I would move the court to win a case. Of course, on default, that's a no-brainer. You know, one of the other ways you can move the court for a win is they never do any kind of a swearing. There's no sworn affidavits. There's nothing really documented on the other side ever, whether you're going in a situation that is battling another individual or battling the government. It's always the same thing because they got lawyers and they won't allow anyone to swear to anything. So that means that everything they said was hearsay because the lawyer is hearsay. He swore to hearsay. It's meaningless. They never answered your affidavit. They never responded. Again, default. That default, you're probably going to have to move to the federal court to have executed because they will never recognize that. But now you got to build your case. And you got to keep it short and sweet, focused, and you got to protect yourself. You see, when you go in for cause, you have to be very specific, okay? You go look at the rules. You'll see that there is a cover sheet. Use that form. Get the cover sheet. You'll also see how they like the papers laid out. They like an index number. They like a listing of all the law that you're putting in there. And I give them everything they want. I try to keep it short and sweet, minimum, but I give them all that they want, okay? Now, the most important part of this whole thing is what you're in there. You're in there for a cause. And I would not use anything above the 10th Amendment to support your unalienable rights. I'd stick down on the first 10 because that clearly is part of the Constitution.
That's just
one.
It. I avoided everything beyond 10 because I've been listening.
Okay.
So, you know.
Okay. Number two, you need, and you're moving into a federal court. You got to make your case. This is an Article III court operating under the rules of the common law. This is a court of record. You have to define those three or four terms in your footnotes. And sometimes you might even want to just put it right into the body of the paperwork. I usually, if I'm doing a 14 font, which is what I usually do now, I might take, and I'm using a 1.5 inch space, you know, 1.5 space, okay? But when I quote a law in the body, I'll drop that down to 1.15 space, okay? I will also drop the font down to a 12. I will italicize the exact quote. I'll tab off the left side and then pull the right side in the same amount of space by dragging, you know, the little arrow up there. You drag it over the 1/2 inch or whatever it is to be equal to the other side. And always make sure all your paperwork is nice, clean, and neat, and make sure your right side edges are all straight. You know, use the justify tab. You got the left side, the center, right side, and justify. Hit your justify tab. Get that nice and square and clean, because you know when you put an impressive paper in there that stands out, crisp, clean, well done. You know, every dot and tittle needs to look good. And keep it, you know, in the same order, constantly doing things the same way. Get your numbers on the far left. Maybe you're going to number a certain area, or you're just going to do line numbers every five lines or whatever. All of that is important. But the thing is you got to get in there your clause, your purpose, your cause, C-A-U-S-E. What is the cause? You're moving for a cause. They didn't give me my due process. And I'd say my unalienable right of due process, okay, protected by the Fifth Amendment, and then I'd quote the Fifth Amendment right there in the Fifth Amendment underneath in the footnote, I leave no stone unturned. They can't make a mistake interpreting anything I write. You want to define it all. You want to make sure Article 3 court. You want to do a memorandum on jurisdiction. I got one up on site. Take that. Use that. Attach
it. I already did.
Okay. Use all of these memorandums I've got. So you got to tighten up. Somewhere they found a place to spearhead and break into your case that they feel comfortable to throw these two stupid things at you.
Right. All right. But assuming everything you said, I've done most of that.
Very clean. She's very clean.
Yeah, Brent, can you hear us?
Yep.
Brent?
No, she is Hindu, but she's never smoked a cigarette.
All right, he's talking to someone else. We don't want to get into his private conversation now. All right, James, back to you. What did you want to say now?
I did most of what you said already. It's in there.
Did you give the lower court judge a writ of error as you left that court? Did you kind of slap them, and did you go after? I mean, you made charges against the judge of right of.
You bet.
How many pages is your movement for cause to the federal court? How many pages is it?
Counting the case citations, about 80.
Okay, that's a lot.
It's
that
heavy.
May be too much. I mean, do you really need that much? Sometimes less is more. Okay?
Well,
And judges will never read all that. Usually federal judges might, but even with all that, I don't think he's going to.
What's the case citations? Is that the exhibits?
The case authority and exhibits. But that's what it appears to be, is the judge says, this is too much. I'm not going to read this. And just pick.
They have it in their rules that you're only allowed so many pages and so many things. They might. That's not right. They shouldn't. But look at if you're moving in there for cause, you shouldn't have to have that much. Okay? You're dealing with jurisdiction, correct? You're dealing with the violation of your unalienable right of due process, correct?
Correct.
Fraud on the court. So there's three issues, and then maybe there's a fourth issue concerning traveling, because I heard you say something about traveling.
Yes.
Okay. So those are the four issues. There's your four violations. Okay. Now,
signed affidavits on the treatment I got from several of the judges, three judges, and I mean total fraud in the magistrate court, the Nisi Prius court, totally so.
Okay, well, those you can do. How many affidavits and how many pages does that consume?
Two, and one of them is probably 8 pages. The other one's probably 5.
Okay. Now, again, there are cases that require that kind of length. You know, there's no doubt about that. There are cases that require that, and you can't get away without having an 8-page or a 5-page affidavit. But in most cases, you don't need that much. You probably are speaking, too much in there. Just the facts, staying to the facts. Maybe you're trying some of the stuff. Maybe you're quoting stuff. Look, an affidavit is only one thing. You're telling a story. You're not saying that anything about a person violating your unalienable rights in your affidavit. Mm. You're just going to tell the issue of what happened. You're going to tell the story of what happened. In your paper, you refer back to what happened. And you give a little detail, and you refer back to the affidavit. Just give a little bit of detail and say that's where my right was violated, here or there. On your affidavit, if it's, you could even put the line numbers on your affidavit also, so you can refer to particular lines if you wanted to do it that way. But again, what you're trying to do, I don't see 80 pages appropriate for that, and I can see how they get confused and lost. And then the other thing is. The judge may figure, you don't have much experience or this or that or whatever the case may be, and he's just not even going to worry about getting beat up. And by the way, he can always turn around and say, well, I must have misinterpreted, by pushing this, because he referred back to you have to be this or you have to be that to come in here for whatever. The other thing is they may play the game that you have to go through the process over there first, Like, for instance, they tried to pull this on us. We got to go get permission. And then we have to go through a certain court here to do this. And then if we don't win there, then we got to go over here and do that before we can get over here to do this. We bypass
pointed all that out. One detail you don't don't know, as early on 5 months ago, after I started getting beat up, ignoring my constitutional rights, I tried to take it to district court, state district court, and asked them to remove to that, quash it, paid the fee, $125.
They don't have the jurisdiction.
Well, this is
what was the conclusion on that?
Silence.
Yeah, they don't have the jurisdiction. No, they don't have the jurisdiction. The only one court in this nation that has the jurisdiction to deal with a violation of one of your unalienable rights is the federal district courts. That's the only court you can go to. You can't go to any other court because they don't have the authority to rule.
Right. So okay. I finally went there. Now I got a remand. And the language is talking about things that, you know, I didn't plead.
Right. I'll tell you what. You know, if you were to tell me that you had 5 or 6 or 8 or 10 or 12 pages or even 15 pages, I'd say send me a copy and let me see if I can find out where you went wrong. But I'll tell you what, you're on Skype. Are we connected on Skype?
No, I'm just on phone.
Okay, yeah, but you have a Skype. Do you have
no,
a Skype
I don't.
Account? All right, sign up for Skype, okay? Get your Skype downloaded onto your computer. Put me in, John Durash, as a friend, okay? And then request, there's a little button there. You request to get connected to me, you know, to befriend me. And just put in John Durash, and you'll find me out of New York. And then when I get the request, I'll accept you. And then once I accept you, you'll see that you've been accepted. Now take your case in PDF form and drop it into my Skype. And if it's something that I can breeze through quickly, okay, because I'm interested to see where it is that you failed. Because somewhere you failed that this guy felt confident to do what he's doing and to send you stupidity. And let's see how you deal with it. That's another thing. Let's see how this guy deals with this. You know, maybe that's what they're doing too, okay? So drop it in my Skype, and then, like I said, if I can breeze through it quickly, maybe I'll be able to discover the place of problem, and then we can talk about it. You can quiz me on this next Monday.
Yes, sir.
Okay? All right, but do it quickly because, you know, I may have to sit around for 3 or 4 or 5 days before I can look at it, so I got to find time to look at it because I'm real busy.
Got you.
But as long as it's there, I'll eventually find time between now and next week, and let me see what I can do.
All right, very good.
Get into the
appreciate
queue early
it.
So you can deal with, you know, we can deal with it right away in the early part.
All right, in the meantime, okay, thank you.
All right, okay. And again, you know, I can't do this for everybody, and I'm just intrigued because it sounds like, you know, James it is, right?
Yes.
That's your name, James.
What it is I completely attacked the lower court. It's a total fraud court. If you hear all the details.
Yeah, they all are.
You probably attacked the judge pretty hard, and this judge probably doesn't want to get involved. You probably brought things up that he doesn't want to get involved in, so he threw you some stupidity. And
it is he definitely protected
him. He threw you a knuckleball, so to speak. To see how
I think
you would deal with it, you know, because whatever you brought up, he didn't want. It was too much for him. That's what I think. I think he just threw you some stuff to try to get rid of you and hope that you would, you know, be over.
Right, and it looks like if I just challenge, he's trying to do a trick. It's a female, to where if I just try to appeal the remand on the 14-4-2 and 4-3, I lose because that's not even part of my case. So
right.
I need to.
All right, well, anyway, the only papers I want to see is whatever papers you filed in the federal court for cause. Okay,
gotcha.
That's all I want to see because that's where we need to find out where you went wrong.
All right.
So include your cover sheet, if you have an index sheet, whatever you got, that whole package that you sent in. But give it to me in PDF form and you know, it could be numerous PDFs, I guess, or if you can collectively make one PDF, that'd be good. And if you do make a one, put it in the order that it should be, as if it was in the index.
Gotcha.
Okay. All right, and we'll see what happens. All right.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Bye. Gerard?
Yeah. I'm unmuted, right?
Yeah, you are.
Okay. Next
you want to try Brent again? Or?
Yeah, I don't see him anymore. He disappeared.
Yeah, I don't see him anymore either.
You know where he is, Dan? I have more trouble trying to find people on this stupid thing.
Yeah, it's no good. That's why we've got to move out of here, too. There's a lot of reasons to move back or somewhere. I really want to get TalkShoe back up and going. I really
yeah, he's
really
here.
Do.
I'll unmute him.
Yeah, try him again.
He's unmuted.
Brent, you there now?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, we've been trying to get you all night.
Well, yeah, I am having technical difficulties with this particular number, but I usually find a way to get in.
Yeah.
And apparently I'm on now, so is it my turn to say something?
Give me a minute. Try to work that out with Jan during the week. Maybe he can help you figure out what you're doing wrong. And we're thinking of going to another venue again anyway, because we got a lot of people have problems with this one, and we even have problems with this one. So I think it's time to move on, but we'll see what we'll do in the next couple of weeks. But meanwhile, you want to talk for a while? We can move to your program.
Sure.
Okay, so let me move to your program. Okay, we're going to now move to Brent Winters. He's the author of The Excellence of the Common Law. You can find Brent. He's a common lawyer. You can find him at commonlawyer.com. And I believe tonight he's going to continue on the Declaration of Independence. Brent?
That's right.
Gerard, you got the what do you call it, the controls, right?
Yep.
Okay, I'm muting out. Go ahead, Brent.
Well, thank you. I've been going through on Monday nights the Declaration of 76, clause by clause and blow by blow, trying to stay on point. And most of the comments that I make here you can find in the booklet I have written called Our Declaration of 76 and Constitution, the Common Lawyer Comments, Clause by Clause and Blow by Blow. And I'm going through that. Of course, I'm making more comments than what are written in the little booklet. It's a booklet that'll fit in your shirt pocket. Can't tell you how many shirt pockets I measured before I had that thing printed, hoping I could get it. I measured all my shirt pockets. Amazingly, I found out that shirt pockets are designed a certain way, and most all of them are the same measurement. It must be part of our culture. But this booklet's 200 pages. It fits in your shirt pocket. And you can find it on Amazon.com or commonlawyer.com. Just type in my name, Brent Allen Winters, and it'll come up. I had a fellow contact me recently.
Excuse me, Brent.
Yes.
Let me ask you a question. I'm intrigued about
this.
Quite a few pages on that. Do you mind if I ask what it cost you to have that printed?
Did you have to buy
a certain amount?
Yes, I did, but I'll probably never do that again because the technology has changed. You know, if you buy, they cost less. The more you buy or the more you order,
right.
It's 1,000. And they get pretty cheap. But I probably will never do that again because the technology has changed since the last time I had them printed. Everything now is moving toward print on demand. In other words, if somebody orders a book, they send me an order. I just send the order to the printer, and he prints the book and sends it to them. That's the new way of doing it, amazingly.
Uh-huh.
And they can print up to books of about 1,000 pages. The thing they can't do is print really thin paper, like the Bibles use, the onion skin paper.
Right.
But
well,
but
what did it cost?
Like
how
that.
Many pages was your book, and what did it cost to have it each one printed? You know,
this book's right at 212 pages, and I think it was something like $3 or $4 a book. But you know, I think I can probably check and find out, and I can get back to you.
Yeah, let's talk about that in the near future, because we're looking to do the sheriff's book, which I think is probably going to be maybe at least twice the thickness of our, jurist handbook.
Sure.
Which I think was about 46, well, let's say 50, it was less than 50, but 50 pages. I think it's going to be probably about 150 pages for a pocket handbook, top pocket. I'm sure we're going to have to buy maybe... I don't know what we have to look on. The more you buy, the cheaper it is. So
the cheaper it is, but I still encourage you to look in, and we'll talk about it. Maybe we can talk.
Yeah, we'll take
print
it off
on demand.
Yeah, we'll take it off the air. Let me get
let you get back.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, that I'm glad you brought it up. It's important that the word gets out, and that technology in our own day dictates success as much as it did in the days of Martin Luther when he nailed that thesis of his to the town bulletin board, and some boys got a hold of it. They had a newfangled contraption in town called a print press, and the rest is history. Well, we're in that age.
What's the name of the booklet that we're talking about that you have? What's the name of the booklet?
Constitution and Declaration of 76.
Okay.
If you go to Amazon, you can find it, or go to www.commonlawyer.com, and it's there also. Appreciate it. Well, my name is Brent,
okay,
and I've spent the last 35 years trying to dig out the truth, and it's been a fascinating road for me, and so I give to you what I've discovered, and no more, no less. Now, we're in paragraph 11 of our Declaration of 76, and it says there that King George III, who was king of England during the days of our separation from Britain, he was king of England, and he said he was emperor in America. Big difference. And that's why, by the way, fundamentally, why our war for separation began, because we said, no, you're king here, you're not emperor. But it says that King George, paragraph 11, has made judges dependent on his will alone for the tenure of their offices and the amount of the payment of their salaries, dependent upon his will alone. That is true yet today in every country on the faces of our globe, if you believe it's round. Whatever you believe about it, every country in the world, the judges are dependent upon the will of the powerful party in their country, usually the executive, the king, the emperor, whatever you want to call him, whoever claims to be sovereign. You want to be a judge, you're not a lawyer. No, not in those countries. You're in part of the civil service ranks. And if you don't uphold the state's machinery, you're gone. Or they'll lower your wages or move you to a lower GS rating. It's nothing but a civil service job. You're part of the cogs of the wheel of government. Now, in our common law country, we have problems here. But we still say that our judges, we complain about it, but we say they're to be independent of mine. They must be. They must exercise independent judgment, not depend upon the judgment of anyone else. By the way, lawyers in America are sworn by their own code of ethics to exercise independent judgment and not depend upon the opinion of any other lawyer or judge, by the way. We live in an adversarial system. And again, I know there are problems, but our country is adversarial. When we go to court, we try to fight. And only by having a fight will the truth ever bob forth from the flux of human existence. Because it is of the nature of man, bent in the wrong direction as he is at heart, to hide the truth. The truth is embarrassing in most cases to somebody, and there's always good reason to hide it. We've discovered by observing the laws of nature that the truth might pop out if we fight over it, if we struggle over it, if we worry over it like a dog worries over a bone. But in the rest of the world, it's just an inquisition. I want to make one mention here. Of course, well, let me, before I do that, notice. It says here, he has made judges dependent on his will for the tenure of their office and the amount of the payment of their salaries. Our Constitution of the United States speaks directly to this. Our Constitution is a brief of common law government. And it is axiomatic at common law that the judiciary must be independent from the other powers of government. That's the way it was in Old England back before the Norman invasion, and that's what we've tried to establish here. For all of our flaws, we've tried to keep it up, and it's up to you to keep keeping it up and keep demanding it so that it not be forgotten. But our Constitution of the United States says that the federal judges are not to have their pay lowered during their tenure of office for this very reason, because that's the common law standard. That's what we have. If you could do that, if you could lower the pay of a judge, you could control him, for crying out loud. He wouldn't be independent anymore. Then I'm going to drop another footnote on this. It says that their pay shall not be diminished during the tenure of their office. That's what our Constitution of the United States says, and that's just repeating the old common law standard. But is there anyone, ask yourself, is there anyone in our country today that is diminishing, that's the key word, diminishing the payment of judges? And the answer is most assuredly yes. And who is it? It is the Federal Reserve Bank, the Federal Reserve Bankers, the privately held Federal Reserve Bank, named Federal Reserve, to fool you, to hornswoggle you into the popular notion that it's a government entity. It's not. It's privately owned. And because of their control of the value of money, by the way, against our Constitution, Congress has the power to set the standards of weights and measures. And I remind folk that in God's eyes, to tamper with standards of weights and measures, as the Federal Reserve bankers do, tampering with the dollar, with the inflation and the raising of interest rates and all the manipulation they do, to do that in the Bible, in God's eyes, is a capital crime. That's what the Bible says. Why does it say that? It says that because capital crimes in every country are always the same. They are the crimes of which that country says strike at the heart of their very existence. And tampering with weights and measures strikes at the heart of our very existence. That's why God says that's a capital crime. And that's what Federal Reserve bankers have been doing since 1913. And by doing so, I'm bringing it back to the judges, they diminish the pay of judges. All this baloney about cost of living increases that people, that federal employees get. I used to be in the armed forces of the United States, and every year we get anywhere from 3 to 4% increase in our pay. Why? Well, to try to cover the inflation that was going on. That's diminishing a fellow's pay. The federal judges, the military men used to get an increase that way. The federal judges don't. And if their salary is set at $212,000 a year, which the last time I checked, that's what it was, that isn't worth $200,000 anymore. Every day it goes down. In violation of this principle that our Declaration of 76 complains about and our Constitution of the United States corrects, but yet, the useful idiots of the evil empire have found a way to get around it. Nobody's noticing. They're controlling. Justice Stevens said not too many years ago, and he's no longer on the bench, but he did say before he got off, he said he'd never seen morale among federal judges so low. Well, why is that? Well, because their pay hasn't been raised for a long time, he said. But he didn't say this, but I say it. Their pay is diminished by inflation. And people say, well, they're making a lot of money. Well, how much money would someone have to pay you to pay attention to other people's problems and do it all day, every day, and pay attention to problems that are offensive and abhorrent to you? That's what judges do all day, every day. And of all the things that government does, and they do most of what government does at the federal and state level now, is not constitutional. It's not according to our common law, not according to our Constitution written, which is a brief of common law government. In other words, it's dealing with powers that government doesn't even have. But the one thing that government does have, a legitimate power it has, is justice. And the other legitimate power is armed defense. We don't like government to do much, but those are two things that only government can ultimately effectively do. And I don't mind having lots of judges. I encourage patriotic people to get rid of the bureaucracies and hire more judges. The glory of Anglo-Saxon justice said, that's our common law justice from the Anglo-Saxons in England, says Blackstone, is that it brought a court to the door of every cottage. You got a problem with your neighbor, you can settle it quickly. And that, by the way, is what makes government legitimate. We don't need less judges, and we don't need less litigation. We need more. Why? Because what people are doing now is they're not litigating. They're not duking it out with their neighbors, their brothers, their sisters. They're not settling their differences lawfully. No. You got a problem with your neighbor? Call some bureaucrat and have him come in and put the hammer on your neighbor. It won't cost you a dime, and you'll get back at the guy. That's not what God wants. God wants us to go in and settle it according to law, not according to some bureaucrat who wants to exercise power. That's where we are. Call the cops. Call the county commissioner. Call anybody who will come in here and make life miserable for my neighbor because he's having a cookout in his backyard and I don't like him anyway, so I'm going to shut him down and tell the local government, that he is a nuisance because he's making smoke. He's lighting a fire. So I've seen these kind of things happen. I'm just giving you the tip of the iceberg of what I've seen. Well, what should happen? Neighbors should take each other to court, like the Bible tells us to do in 1 Corinthians chapter 6. And amazingly, all of popular Christianity has turned that around to say just the opposite of what it says. The courts are the most important part of our government. They are the first part of our government. And when we as Americans first came into these, all across the country, these wilderness areas, we didn't establish a legislature. We didn't establish a police force. What did we establish first? Go read the records. It's everywhere. It's fun to read. We established courts and we assembled juries. I read recently the accounts of what became Supreme Court Justice Stephen Field when he first went to California in the year 1850 during the gold rush. There was no government. And he told stories of the courts that were impaneled and the juries that were impaneled and the courts that were held and how he participated in legal cases in tents that were set up so they could get out of the rain. They didn't even have any buildings. And they didn't worry about establishing other parts of government. They didn't even have jails. If they had to do something to a man, he was a judge for a while. He'd chain them to a tree. They didn't have any jails. I lived in a place out in Arizona. In the middle of this little town was the jail tree. And being from the Midwest, I'd never heard of such a thing. And I went and started, everybody called it the jail tree, and I began to ask people what it meant. It was an old tree out in the desert. It was a big tree for the desert, but it had been there for well over 100 years, and the reason they called it the jail tree, because it was the tree where prisoners were chained if they were jailed. They didn't have a jail. And you say, well, that's brutal. I don't know that necessarily is. If a man's waiting for trial and you think he's going to run away, you've got to put him in ward someplace. And if you don't have a building, you can chain him to a tree, and that's what they used to do. Is that any worse than putting a man in a cage? I don't believe it is. To put a man in ward before trial is lawful. To jail him afterwards, quite another matter. As a matter of fact, God doesn't authorize such ridiculous things, and we in America, of course, jail more people than anybody on the face of the planet per capita, including the Chinese now. That's how far out we've got. Well, let's go on. We talked about our Declaration of 76 requiring that judges be not dependent upon the government for their pay. And judges, of course, are to follow due process. And we talked about Magna Carta giving the two requirements, and our Constitution repeats these in some. Magna Carta, the year 1215, provides the two requirements for judges. Here it is. I'm going to read the provision of Magna Carta, translated into English, of course. It was originally written in Latin. But it says this, we meaning the crown, plural of sovereignty, we will not make, that means appoint justices, constables, sheriffs, or bailiffs who do not know the law of the land and mean to observe it well. Two requirements. You must know the law and mean to observe it well. And as we'd said last week, that doesn't mean know about it. That means know it. Big difference. Know the law of the land. What is the law of the land? That phrase lifted from Magna Carta, put in our constitutional Article 6. What is the law of the land? It is due process. That's what it is. That's the old phrase for due process. What is due process? It is our common law. Our common law doesn't include due process. Our common law is due process. I repeat this often. I'm going to repeat it again. It's so important, so fundamental. Our law is process-oriented. That's our common law. We pay attention to the course, step by step, of the process that is due and owing to all concerned. We don't focus on the result. We just focus on the process, and the result will take care of itself. Whereas in the rest of the world, they focus on the result. And any process that I've got to use to get to that result is okay, as long as I reach the result that the powerful party, the powers that be, the state wants. Big difference in us and all of the rest of the world, including almost all of the rest of the Western world. I weary of people saying, well, we and our Western culture and all and on. They go, no. We're different from Western culture in America. We're not Western culture. We're not Romanesque. We're not under the Roman law. We're not part of that tradition. Roman law has nothing to do with us. That's the continent of Europe. That's the West. We are a common law country, and that is different than the continent of Europe, like night and day. But because the evil empire wants to obscure the differences, they keep telling you that you're part of Western, or you are Western culture. Well, we are from the West. We're certainly not from the East, but we don't identify. Western culture is identified with the word Rome. That's not us. We're a common law country. Rome says, fundamentally, is the doctrine yet of Rome, that the ends justifies the means. And with us, the means justifies the ends. If we don't follow due process, the result is not reliable. Paragraph 12. Declaration of 76 says this, he, that is King George III, has erected a multitude of new offices and sent hither swarms of officers to harass our people and eat out their substance. That's some picturesque language that Tom Jefferson put in there. He, the king, has erected a multitude of new offices and sent hither swarms of officers to harass our people and eat out of their substance. There was a congressman from out west a few decades ago, wrote a book called To Harass Our People, taking this phrase for the title of his book, and it was about the IRS. IRS. And he said all these people do is harass us, and there are swarms of them. There are swarms of officers now. Is this standard he talks of here, that he complains of here? Say, he says, by saying this, that it's wrong to have swarms of bureaucrats. What do? They harass our people, and they eat out their substance. They harass our people and eat out their substance. That means they take their property without due process of law, without our common law. Just take it. Result-oriented, you see. And they are swarms of officers. Every president that gets in office, every governor that gets in office, what he wants to do and does try to do with all of his might is establish all new bureaucracies and new offices. Why? Well, that increases his power, puts more people under his employ. At the beginning of the Civil War, there were approximately 6,000 federal employees. You say, well, that stands to reason, Brent. There were only less than 30 million people in the country at that time. Yeah, that's true. But still, there were only 6,000. And most people didn't even know where Washington, D.C. was, didn't care. Why? Well, because the states, local, power was more local within the states and within the counties. 6,000 people employed by the federal government. At the end of that war, 4 years later, the year 1865, there were 60,000 federal employees. In 4 years, it went from 6,000 to 60,000. That's a multiple of a lot, do the arithmetic. And it's been increasing since 1865 exponentially, ever since, every year. We're in the millions of federal officers now. That doesn't count the state offices, swarms of offices. What do? Do they accomplish anything? Do they increase productivity? Do they provide freedom? I've heard people say they do. That's bozoism. You've got to be blind as a bat, and some people are. No, they harass our people and eat out their substance. Ceases to amaze me, because we are a common law country, even in the face of the bureaucracies. And I've heard people who study the matter say that we are the most regulated code country in the world. But yet, we still prosper compared to other places. Why is that? The reason is because we are a common law country. We still have separation of powers because we're a common law country. We still have independence of the judiciary, at least the ideal of it, because we are a common law country. We pursue that ideal. Even though we don't achieve it, we're still pursuing it. They don't even know about it in the rest of the world. Matter of fact, they think it's stupid.
we still have juries in America, and we pursue that ideal. There are those of us who keep pursuing it. And it is for those reasons, in the face of all of this madness, this lawlessness that the evil empire, the law of the city, as opposed to the law of the land, puts on us, that we still continue to prosper because our common law forms are still in place and they still serve us. We have such a habit of our common law, and our common law habits go a long way to upholding us. And there must be a critical mass of persons in our country that pursue hard these common law habits. What is common law? It's a way of thinking that translates into a way of life. It is not a list of laws. Don't go looking for them. You're going to find what defined due process? You can't do it. Due process shows itself as the need arises. We have some fundamental ideas about it, like we say, notice and a genuine opportunity to be heard before the fight, before the trial, before the hearing. All that's true. But that's just a very small part of process. It gets huge. As a matter of fact, our Constitution of the United States is a document not of what is to be done. It stresses more how it is to be done. How? That's process, H-O-W. And that's why our Bible stresses process, our Bible. Our Declaration of 76 cites our Bible when it says the laws of nature, that's volume 1, unwritten in the nature of things. And then it cites volume 2, the Bible, the laws of nature's God, Blackstone, defines those or tells us what they are, how those phrases are understood. That's why our Bibles say that God's way, the creator of heaven and earth, his way, is a way, W-A-Y, a course to follow. Not a result to reach. Why? Because our law of the land, that's God's law, friends, neighbors, and kin, our law of the land, our common laws, process-oriented. Well, he's erected this multitude of offices. Civil law-minded government, that's city law-minded government, imposed between you and the jury layers of bureaucrats with their administrative law. Have you noticed? If you have a problem with the IRS and you want to settle the matter in court, you don't go to a real court, to the judicial branch. No. They make you go to a tax court. They put a black robe on the judge. They claim they follow the common law rules of evidence of the courts. And they do until it's inconvenient for them, and then they stop. Why? Well, because they're nothing but a executive branch tribunal. They're just the executive, the president of the United States, by his appointees. Appointees is appointed judges. In this case, following the policies of the bureaucracy of the executive branch. By the way, let's get this maybe before you. Now would be a time to remind you, if you haven't already thought this through, bureaucracies are in control of the executive branch. The executive branch. Congress does not control bureaucracies. The courts do not command bureaucracies. The president of the United States and the governors of the separate states control the bureaucracy. So if you go in front of an administrative court, you are, as it were, standing in front of the governor of your state, if it's a state administrative court, or the president of the United States. And what's his job, by the way? What is the job of the chief executive of a jurisdiction, such as the president of the United States? The job of the executive is to enforce the law. Do you think you're going to get a fair hearing in an administrative court? No! And, of course, they all know that, and lawyers all know that, and it's just a game you got to go through to get to a real judge, if you ever get to one at all, if you have any money left by the time it's over. Listen to Carl Llewellyn. Carl Llewellyn. I think he, by the 1950s, Carl Llewellyn was gone, but he was a well-known common lawyer. And after decades of consideration, he noted three things of administrative law. Now, administrative law wasn't a big thing in America until the 1930s, and Roosevelt and all of his socialist crowd established in America at the federal level administrative courts, and then the states followed suit. And there was that switch in time that saved 9 justices when he threatened to pack the court with 14 to get his way. And Justice Jackson flipped and began to support his socialist policies and his administrative courts. What the administrative courts did was they said, well, the executive, the president, can make regulations and they're equivalent to law. That wasn't true in America before Roosevelt. Now it's true everywhere. So if you have a problem with government, you got to go in front of an administrative court, administrative code. I was involved in the oil and gas production end of things for a while. And wow, these poor fellas trying to run oil wells, they could never get in front. It's impossible to get in front of a real judge if you really got a problem. No, you've got to go in front of the governor. He just tells you what to do, his courts, and that's the end of it. Carl Llewellyn said this. I want to get to Carl, because he who never quotes is never quoted, and I want to quote Carl. He noted three things about administrative law. This was after the advent of it, Roosevelt. He said, first, it is a late arrival in our common law country. Second, it is a detour from the trail through which parties must struggle in their quest for justice. And third, this detour from justice's trail leads into the wilds of government, I'm quoting, and politics, and queer events in both. Administrative law leads into the wilds of government and politics, and queer events in both. I've been in government, and I've been in politics. It's lawlessness. I had a friend tell me recently, Brent, I'm so glad they got government off, or got crime off the streets and back in government where it belongs. Well, I think it's always kind of been there. It's just getting worse. And if you get involved in an administrative court, you will be led into the wilds of government. In your quest for justice, you won't find it. You'll just get lost. That's what will happen. Well, our common law tradition is intolerant of professional bureaucrats, that is, law enforcement agents and prosecutors, which all are part and parcel of the city law, the civil law tradition, in contrast with our law of the land. And the city law tradition is the enemy and antagonist of our common law. Our administrative law and our administrative tribunals are nothing more than a tangled matting of brambles. And these brambles keep you from trial by jury, and also keep you from a fair and impartial hearing before a neutral judge. You see, if the administrative law judge is the judge and you're in front of one of those kind of courts, you're not going to get a fair hearing. No, because those judges, watch me close, and we're back to the previous paragraph of our Declaration of 76, where it says that the king has made judges dependent upon his will alone for the tenure of their offices. If you don't do what the president says in the federal administrative courts, if you don't do what the governor of your state says in the state administrative courts, you're out of there. You lose your job. Why? Because you're working for that judge works and is beholden to the executive officer, the president or the governor, whichever it may be, beholden to him for his judge or for his judgeship, for his position and pay. Now, our national motto is, well, it's not El Pluribus Unum, like some people tell me. It is, by declaration of Congress, in God we trust. That's our national motto. And to trust God is to rely upon his unchanging laws. The laws of nature's God. In fact, any person who tries to break the laws of nature's God, violate the laws of nature's God, trespass the laws of nature's God, will instead break himself on those laws, because those laws don't vary. You may think you have beat them. You will not. You can beat the laws of man sometimes, but you won't beat the laws of God. And that's the difference between the laws of man and the laws of God. Well, let's go to one more paragraph, and that'll be enough for this evening. If I finish this one, maybe there's something more I need to say. Oh, well, let's see. Administrative law, we talked about that. It infected all of Europe. It really came to the forefront during the French Revolution. The French invented it in its modern form, using the Code of Rome, renaming it the Code of Napoleon. And it's appeared under many labels and still does, but it's all the same stinking filthy stuff. Paragraph 13 says this. He has kept among us, that's the King of England, King George III, claiming to be emperor in the colonies, That's different. He has kept among us in times of peace standing armies without the consent of our legislatures. Now, listen to this closely. Where armies occupy, martial law commands, displacing common law. Where armies occupy, martial law commands, displacing common law. Our common law has always been and is still intolerant of standing armies because such an army tempts office holders to use it to spread martial law. If you control an army of 1,000,000 men, just as an example to throw out a figure, there's that many in the armed forces of the United States. If you're a man, I don't care how good you are when you went into office, like the President of the United States, and you command an army or a navy, an air force, the Marines, that will make a man quickly drunk with power. That's why we only let stay in office 4 years. There is no way a man could not become drunk with that power. And once he becomes a little bit tipsy with that power, he'll want to get everybody under that same law because, as General Schwarzkopf said after Desert Storm, then he retired and he moved down to Florida and he got him an apartment and tried to relax. And he made this comment. He said, I used to speak and 600,000 men would respond. All I had to do was quietly speak. And he said, now I can't even get a plumber to my house within 48 hours. If you're a man that controls that many men, and all of a sudden you have no control of anyone, that's hard on you. And to have that kind of power makes a fellow want to get more. And how do you get more? Well, under martial law, men obey without question. You get more bureaucrats, more administration, and then you want to bring the whole world under your law. That's what the King of England did. He said, I'm king in England. That's a limited government, a limited office, a limited power, but I'm emperor in my empire, including the American colonies. What does that mean? That means the law of the city applies, and everyone here in the colonies, all approximately 3 million people, were bound to obey him, to jump when he hollered, just like a military man, just like a soldier would if he was commanded to jump. What do you do when you're under martial law? You jump. And if you don't jump and it happens to be time of war, you might get killed. You might be executed. You better do what you're told. Well, that's what the King of England wanted the colonists to do, and he wanted them under his power. In that way, that's why he has kept an army among us in times of peace. And by the way, if an army is kept among you in times of peace and quartered in the houses, which they also complained of in our Constitution of the United States forbids quartering of soldiers. What have you got? Well, it's having the eyes and the ears of the government in your own home with you to know everything, to hear everything you do, to watch everything you do. It's as though they were listening to all your cell phone conversations, which they, of course, can do now. All of those things are not part of our common law. Our common law makes a strong distinction between the government and the military forces and the non-military forces. All of this baloney, all of this ridiculous, childish talk meant to hornswoggle you into believing that those in office are out for your good. Well, as good a men as they are, they don't even know who you are. Who are you kidding? And this talk about cooperating with government. Well, he refused to cooperate. We have a cooperation between the private and the public sector. That's against our common law. Because inevitably, when the private and the public sector work together, who is the dominant force, the dominant party in such a relationship? I'll tell you who it is. It's the party that has the most physical power. Who has the most physical power? The government. There is no such thing as a partnership, and even partnership between the private and public sector. The only way to make the private, keep the private sector in charge, is to separate them from the government. I'll give one case in point, and then I'll quit. When Rome tried to conquer Britain, which it did once militarily, then couldn't hold on to it for a lot of reasons, but they left. But they came back a few centuries later after the empire waned and Constantine decided he'd use the label Christianity and make it imperial and established in strength the imperial church. Then he went back. He sent his emissaries back. A man by the name of Augustine went back to Britain. and he talked them into accepting the British calendars. And he talked the churchmen there in the 7th century, the 7th century, before Rome ever went back, talked them into shaving the tops of their heads, and the clergymen, and talked them into wearing the cowl, and all the things Rome does. And by doing so, they accepted some of what Rome had for them. They couldn't do it militarily, so they tried to do it religiously. But then later, the Pope of Rome said, I don't want the courts of Rome, I don't want my priests to serve on the benches of the common law courts. I want to separate the Roman courts, the church courts, from the common law courts. It was a very wise move for the evil man to do. And why do I say that? Because he finally figured out that if you separate the two, that he, by separating, could retain power. And his power would grow. And indeed it did. And the history of England is a history of the conflict between those two jurisdictions, the church courts of equity, can be called, and the common law courts. Well, the same thing is true with us. If we at the private sector, that was for evil that was done. If we for good in the private sector say, no, we are separate from government. We are not to be trying to cooperate with the bureaucrats. No, you guys do your thing, and we don't like what you're doing. We're going to do our thing. We will retain power, and our power will grow. That's my conclusion from history and from the nature of things. Well, that's a little bit about our Declaration of 76. I think we're up to paragraph 13. We started in paragraph 13. There's more to say about standing armies. We'll talk about that next time, Lord willing. And then we'll go to paragraph 14 and give you a preview. It says he is affected to render the military independent of and superior to the civil power. That's an important clause of our Declaration of 76. Again, I say my views expressed here may or may not be the opinions of NLA, but I do want to mention, too, John and Jan, that we're supposed to be on the radio in a few days, and people might want to listen in. It's the Randy Yarborough Show, and I'm supposed to interview John and Jan, I think. Both of you are going to be on and talk about what NLA is doing. Back to you, Jan and John, whoever's there.
All right, thank you, Brent. And yeah, it was Gerard and myself. So, go ahead, Gerard, you got the mic.
I lost my wall.
Oh, well, rebuild it again.
The wall is gone. I lost my control.
Why?
I don't know.
You got your little box up there? You got your little box? You can open the wall again? Well, go open the wall again.
Hang on a minute. You walk.
Meanwhile, I'll press for the next person while you're doing it.
Yeah.
All right.
You've only got about 15 minutes left.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's take the next person. It looks like Greta. MI, what's that, Michigan?
Hi. Good evening, everybody. I just kind of wanted to ask real briefly if anybody might know the status of the affidavits that had most recently been sent. Was just kind of wondering if anybody could kind of give me an idea of what's going on with them, if anything. Or
okay, when you say the affidavits, are you talking about the nonjudicial foreclosures with the affidavit or just the affidavits?
It's not a foreclosure. It was just my affidavit that I had sent in to go along with what was going to go. I believe you guys are sending it to a federal.
Yeah, when did you send the affidavit?
It was quite some time ago.
Okay, because I think we posted a lot of them already and filed them in the courts.
I don't even know the status.
Yeah, well, basically what we're doing with the affidavits is they're really just compiling a complaint of people, you know, and at some point in time it'll need to be dealt with in the court, and it'll probably be done locally more than anything else, but it really is really trying to build up cases against the judiciary, because they're just ignoring justice, you know. So anybody who has an affidavit that they want us to file into the court into our case, we will, We won't try those cases, but it'll be required at some point in time once we get that, leverage and move into the court and able to start to prosecute or get some of these cases prosecuted, then all those affidavits will have to be dealt with, and they will have to be done on a local level. It'll force the court to deal with them. So that's the purpose of the affidavits. Now, anyone can file any affidavit. There is no particular charge or anything. You know, we ask for a donation, of course. You can say.
I donated, you know. Sure. Yeah. I've donated.
And some
and
people
I will continue
can't.
To, I might add. But my question, I suppose, really was well, yeah, no problem. Hey, worth every penny and then some. Trust me, if I can ever get any justice and get back some of the over $700,000 they've stolen to date, I can promise you that I will make a healthy donation to this cause.
Well, I can promise
and
you one
guarantee.
Thing. I can promise you one thing. The day that we actually start to move our cases, which means we get prosecutors, U.S. attorneys, prosecutors, or special prosecutors, the day we start to get that and the courts start to open up to all of these cases we got going, then mm-hmm. that's the day that all of these affidavits, we'll start dealing with them and we'll be pushing them into the local levels for people to deal with, but you'll be getting courts of justice then. And that'll also be that that time period we will be pushing forward the administrators of the common law grand jury or trial jury, but the administrators for that, and start moving across the nation and taking our courts back. So that's when that will happen. So it really is just putting you in sort of a queue, so to speak, at some point to be dealt with. Now, the same thing with the non-judiciary foreclosures. In some cases, we might be able to, get them to the point where they start to do the right thing. But at the moment we get rid of this, we have the problematic judge that is trying to seize control of our court. We're going to be dealing with him hopefully in the next week or two, and also with the absentee magistrate of this court, we're going to be dealing with him also hopefully in the next week or two, and move in through other things that we're planning to do in order to get us to the point to leverage it back. Once we do that, then we're going to start doing some defaults on all of these non-judicial foreclosures, which we may start doing right away anyway. We may start moving that while we're doing the other process, at least get them into the courts. But we're going to do a defaults and move the court to sign off on those defaults so people can get their restitution and get their property back or whatever the case may be. Now, again, we don't want to be naive about this. This is an uphill battle, and we'll keep moving the procedures forward. And it may still be a time before we can actually get the execution, because in order to get the execution on these defaults, we have to have the clerk sign off on it under an affidavit. What do they call that? I forget what they call that affidavit, but anyway, under an affidavit, we will get that done, or, which we prefer, is really we want the magistrate to sign off as the administrator of the court to sign off on that default instead of the clerk. And if we can get that, then you got something you could take to the sheriff and do with it, okay? Now,
wonderful.
Again, that's where we're heading to. How long it takes to get there, we're in the battle. We're in the middle of the battle. And
absolutely. I just wondered if there was any way in which
it's called an affidavit of default, I think. But go ahead.
Right. Oh, okay. I was just wondering if there's any way in which I could check on the status of where it might be. I'm not even 100% sure that you received it. You see, I have no way of validating. I know that I sent it. I know that I sent a hard copy to April. So April has the hard copy. And
okay.
I mailed one also to you, I believe.
Okay. Well, we do have a bunch of affidavits. We have filed some, and I got to check to see, if we got some others that haven't been filed yet. But we're not, I don't think we're actually putting these affidavits up on online. Maybe we should. I think maybe we should start putting these affidavits.
Well, there's no way for me to understand if I needed to resubmit it, so to make sure that it's in the group.
Well, if you want to send another copy to National Liberty Alliance, do that, and this way, if it didn't get in, it will get in. But it should be in.
Bless
the file.
I did send it, but I didn't send it in any manner in which I would be able to understand whether or not it was received. So I guess that's why I was asking.
I think what we'll do, like I said, is I think we'll start filing these things up on our. On our page online, you know, where we're given all of the other papers that were filed. We have a sort of a docket up there. So I think maybe we'll start filing them there so that if you wanted to see if it was filed, then you go up there.
Oh,
and if it's filed on our line, then it's been filed in the court. So
excellent.
I haven't sent anything into the court since our last paper, so any affidavits that came in, I don't know, the past maybe 3 weeks or so, any of those affidavits would not have been filed up yet. But again, if you want to make sure, send us another one to the National Liberty Alliance at the Hyde Park address. You'll find that under the.
I've mailed it there previously.
Yeah.
So.
Right. And just to finish off what I wanted to say concerning these papers, you know, even if you can't make a donation, we won't refuse anyone their paperwork. We will do their paperwork. And that's why sometimes when people give more than we ask, you know, we suggest a certain donation on the, the non-judicial foreclosures papers. But on the affidavits, it doesn't really cost much to talk about to make the filing. So, you know, $5, $10 donation is nice. Of course, $100 is much, much nicer. But, you know, just something to help
out. I was thinking more like $100,000. I mean, you know, I was thinking
that
seriously. And I mean that with all sincerity. And listen to me, when I say I have documentation that these guys have criminally stripped me 5 times now, and they have over $700,000 to date of my assets, I'm saying that I would make a healthy donation to your cause because I have such a heartfelt belief in what it is you folks do. I mean that with all sincerity. You guys have God at your core. That's amazing. And your point on, and you guys are straight arrows, and I just hold you in my prayers, and I'm thankful that you exist. And I certainly, like I said, will make a very good sizable donation. I mean, because I can't think of anything I'd rather do than to help others that are in the same boat.
We do sincerely appreciate your kind words, and we do our best, and we're all working together to do our best. And
sure.
And you know, but you know, again, we do want to press every case that comes into us, every affidavit that comes into us, that you know, we will get them up there now. You know, anybody that's dealing with an affidavit with, well, we'll probably do right to travel affidavits also if people want to do those. But don't get into the man on the land stuff. Keep it pure. Just, you know, tell the story of what happened. And
I believe I did. I mean, I don't know if you've had an opportunity to eyeball my affidavit as of yet or not, but I would greatly appreciate any one of you folks that are at the helm there to eyeball at least and give me an understanding of if you absolutely hate it or if you think it's worthy or
well, I'll tell you
something.
What, if you send it to me, what's your first name again?
Is Greta.
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 Okay, Greta. If you send it, you know, I recognize your name, so I must have seen it. But look, send me another one, and if I get it before next Monday, I'll breeze through it. And if you want to get into the queue early and ask a question or two on it, I'll be more than happy to answer.
Absolutely. And I send it to John, is that correct?
Just send it to National Liberty Alliance in the Hyde Park address.
Okay.
Yeah, and you know, I get that mail anyway, so.
All right, but, so nobody in attention to.
No, I'm the only one that gets that mail in that particular address. We have another address that's down in Westchester, and that's for a lot of, we use that for the court papers and stuff. I don't get that mail directly. Someone else gets it, and then they forward things to me, so.
Absolutely. But, would you like this also notarized? The previous one I sent was.
Yeah, if you want to send me a copy of the notarized one, that's fine, as long as you have the original and keep maintaining it.
Yeah, no, I'll get another one notarized. No big deal. I'll just do it, and I'll have it in the mail this week.
Okay, that's good. Appreciate it.
Thank you for your
time
tonight.
We do like to keep, when it comes to affidavits, we do like to get the original if we can get it, to keep it in the file.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate
okay, thank you. Good evening. Bye-bye.
Okay, let me just take the opportunity to mention, since we were talking about donations, if there happens to be anyone out there that's got really deep pockets and can afford a really, really big check, which could be $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, whatever. I mean, we're talking about someone who really has got some money. But anybody that can afford $100,000 or $75,000, that would support our entire project for the sheriffs. I mean, we'd be able to get that website up in mega speed, you know, very quickly. We would be able to order the books very quickly, you know, within a week, because it's not finished in writing, but boy, if I had some money like that, believe me, that's all I'd be looking at is to finish that
Amen.
Book and finish that website. Oh. But I'd get those books out. We'd order maybe 100,000 books, okay, which we'd be able to get at a very good price at that kind of a number, mm-hmm. And we would be able to send every sheriff in the United States 20 books, and we'd have a great reserve sitting back holding up to any sheriff who needs more and just send them out to them for free. I mean, we would hugely move that process.
I can't think of anything I would rather do, and I mean that with all sincerity. I fully intend on making sure that the people that are at the helm, like you guys, are helped in a major way, because my heart is there. Any more, the money is insignificant almost. I hate to say that it's over $700,000, but I have been literally fighting for my life for 6 years. And I still say that there's a bench warrant that they bring out and take away and bring out and take away. I have a license to carry a weapon, and I have been since 2010. I'm not a criminal. I've been fingerprinted more than anybody I know in the medical field in which I work. You know what I mean? Criminal histories are commonplace in my, and I have paperwork to back that up. But when the common police department says, well, we got a bench warrant here, and we have to call to see if they want you, and then I have an attorney's office that stays on the line for almost 2 hours, an hour and 45 minutes, and these guys are sharp. There's nothing slow about that office. They said, Greta, we have turned over every possible place where there could be a bench warrant, and we can't find anything on paper. But I can tell you and I can promise you that the Owosso PD said that there was one that existed, and they were contemplating whether they're going to take me in. Come on, you guys. That's like being in jail all the time.
Yeah, that's horrible
all the time.
To live under that fear. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, this is my reality.
I know
reality.
When I was battling
this
the IRS.
This is my reality. I just want people to know this is the way I live. This is my reality. I have been asset stripped 5 times. Five times. It's like being waterboarded. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I don't know exactly what that is.
Woo!
It doesn't sound good, you know?
It isn't. Listen, this is the same town in which the national newsworthy, Flint, Michigan, is on the radar of the national news because of the corruption in the waters. That's not the only corruption going on in that town.
Well, you know, I can appreciate
your fears there.
And then I have the paperwork to back it up. I can appreciate your fears there of being arrested at any given moment.
Absolutely.
I know when I was battling the IRS and they were coming down real hard on me, and I was always thinking, boy, they're going to raid my house one day and they're going to take me out. And so
I've been in jail for 4.5 months. And the charge was civil contempt of court, indefinite incarceration.
Well, that's
4.5 months.
Well, look at. Not only is that unconstitutional and a violation of the honorable rights, if you look at the jurisdiction, they didn't even have the authority to do that because they were acted as an administrative court, and that's the key. They're in a jurisdiction outside of the common law, and that in itself, when we get the common law going, that's where you'll want to sit, and you know. They never gave you the due process. You were incarcerated illegally.
Dear God, I mean,
you can go for at least $1,000 a day. You might even be able to think about $5,000, but you can get at least $1,000 a day for being in jail during that time period as a restitution. But look, we're just about out of time, and I want to take just one more caller.
Okay, sorry.
I got to let you know.
All right. Bye bye.
Okay. We only got a minute or two because we're already a minute or two over. We're going to take Paul from looks like Michigan also. Go right ahead, Paul.
Yeah. Is Brent still on the call yet?
Brent, are you still here? If he's here, he'll hear you, but go ahead.
Well, I got a couple of questions for him and him only.
Oh.
So
right.
If he's
Brent,
not on.
Are you here? Brent?
Yeah, yes, I'm here.
Okay. All I got to say is try to make the question short and try to make the answer short because we're over time, 2 minutes, and I don't want to do much overtime, but go ahead.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Brent, I have all your books. I really enjoy them. I give some away as gifts. My question, I got two. One is, I ordered your Bible about a year ago and paid for it,
mm-hmm.
and I want to know progress on it. I understand you had some publishing problems, so is it coming soon, or how's it coming?
Well, I'm glad you contacted me. What I need to do right now, I don't know what the problem is, but I'm pulling out my book here, and I want to quickly give me your name, and make sure, give me your name first. What's your name and address?
Paul Van Kuvering.
Do you want to give the address over the
yeah, don't do that.
Air, or do you want to maybe email it to him? Brent, give him your email.
Yeah, go to commonlawyer.com.
Yep.
And you can click on the contact button, and you can email me from there, Paul.
Okay, I tried that with Kay at N Church, and I can't seem to get any results. I also want to buy.
Well, you know what? Why don't you email it to me or Gerard,
uh-huh.
and we'll drop it into Brent's box on Skype.
That'd
okay.
be fine.
Also, that clause by clause books. I want to buy multiple copies to give out. So
uh-huh.
I wanted to get a cut rate price, and she said a long time ago she'd get me one, but I don't get many results from her, so.
Oh, okay.
Why don't you, with these issues here, why don't you give a call to Brent? Brent, do you want to give him your phone number? Or
Well, I prefer that you email me your number and I could call you.
Okay,
so
email Brent your phone number.
Uh-huh.
You want to give him your email so he can just go directly without going onto the site? What's your
email? Just go to acommonlawyer@gmail.com.
acommonlawyer.com. What is it?
acommonlawyer@gmail.com.
Okay, I will do that.
Just mail your phone number, give him brief information, and he'll get back to you.
Yeah,
thanks.
Did you have one other question, Paul, or something, or was that it?
Well, that was two questions, about his Bible and about multiple copies of Clause by Clause.
Okay, so
yeah.
You guys can deal with that on the phone.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, all right, we're going to get out of here. But I'll tell you what, I'll spend two more minutes. There's one person left in the queue. David, you got the mic. Only got a minute or two. David M.
Dave, John.
Hey.
John,
Dave. Magello, how you doing?
Yeah, what's going on, guy?
What's up?
Oh, I just calling to say hi. You can. I just listen in. I was hitting buttons here. I didn't know how this worked, so.
Hey,
no
did you hear? Did you hear the earlier part of this program? Because I put a lot of information.
No, I just got in town.
Interested. All right. Well, look, when you get a chance,
just get it uploaded. I'll listen to it later.
Download that one because it's a lot of information on getting into the federal courts and papers and filing and different things of that nature. And anybody that I'm moving too fast for, especially people that are kind of new to this and they don't understand a lot of the language yet, or it's it's a little bit unfamiliar language, you can go up here and download the program, and it's an MP3, and you can pause it and rewind it and stop it and take notes and get all this information out and lay. And then if you have questions to expand on the meaning of some of these things, you can bring them up on another evening here on our open forum program here, and we'll try to expound further on a particular issue or meaning of something, So, all right, David, if you haven't got anything, we're gone. Are you done?
Yeah, we're good. I'll talk to you later.
Okay. All right. Godspeed, Dave. All right. Good night, everybody. Thanks, everyone, for coming. Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. And again, everybody needs to get into the game here. Thank you.